This is The Program with Andrew Walker and Satyar Shah on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Hands off, Jimmy! Don't touch Jimmy!
Social distancing in style from their homes and broadcasting live. Here's Andrew and Sat.
Feels good, doesn't it? Happy Wednesday, Vancouver. Beautiful sunny day. And the day after a playoff win, play-in win, whatever, semantics. The day after a postseason win is so much better.
Everything is a lot better, isn't it? It's just fun.
Well,
honestly,
no,
today,
no,
well,
no. I mean, everything is not better. The mood but, as it relates to hockey is better. Everything else is very, very bad still. Very bad.
That's okay. I mean, it's the dog in the dog gif in the fire. Everything is fine. Sipping on the coffee. Like, that's where we're at. But regardless, I'm basking in the glow of a massive Canucks victory in a postseason game and a fun playoff series. Like, this is what we've been waiting for 5 years. These emotions, these ups and downs.
Yeah.
You know, feeling as elated as you did last night when the Canucks won, staying up late to listening to the postgame show. I mean, this is what you've been waiting for 5 years.
Yeah, and it's and I get it. You know, it's not quite the first round yet. I think as every game goes on, your levels of intensity and stuff, they're going to get higher. Like, this is the low end, which is pretty exciting. And
it's going to get a lot better.
Yeah, and also, like, maybe this is a you know, pessimistic way of thinking, but also it sure beats the opposite of what could have happened, right? Like it's a best of five. It's so short. The Canucks were not good in game one. We know that. And so last night, things happened. It's one game of hockey, and you lose last night, and you're in a world of trouble. But they did the right things. They played really, really well. The big guns were good, and they win that game. If it goes the opposite way, man, so, like, we're doing the show today, and the Canucks are trailing 2-0 in a best of five to a team that's not even that great. Like, it's a real disappointing negative vibe. It's amazing what one win can do for you, and we're left, you know, thinking about game three tomorrow, and it's awesome. By the way, it's an early start tomorrow. 11:30 puck drop, 9:30. Sat and I will get you set with the pregame show here on Sportsnet 650. It'll take up most of the afternoon, and then Sat and I, followed by Dan and Randeep, will take the postgame show as late as we need to go. We'll see what happens. But yeah, you know, game three tomorrow, it's a huge day in this city.
And we know there's going to be at least another game on Friday as well, and the puck drop for that is 7:45. So there's back-to-back game days coming up.
I was kind of hoping for like the 4 p.m. start on Friday.
You know what? I was kind of looking at that. I did wonder if they were going to throw a 3:30 or 4 or 5 start at the Canucks, because no, at 3:30 start, because once if you eventually have to play in every time slot, or at least you should be scheduled to do so in the play-in round. Obviously, though, with, you know, a couple series, I mean, one series being done already, I know the Panthers figured out a way to at least push it forward to a game four in their series against the Islanders. But now you want to kind of feature that, you know, Canucks game at 7:45 as well, have it on later in the evening. But I still think there's going to be a 3:30 start at some point for the Canucks. Well, unless, you know,
right.
If things don't, right. Well, that, then, well, I mean, if there's not, there might be a different conversation.
Yeah. But also there's, you know, there's going to be some series that might end right a little earlier. So I don't know if they'll force these super early starts on anybody, if there's just, you know, a couple of game fives left or anything like that.
Right. No. Yeah. And, you know, then that's going to kind of throw everything out of the window. But as far as your point of how the emotions change from a loss to a victory, that is what the playoffs are all about. And when you kind of see how that team reacted, you went from, a lot of people watched that first game, and we talked about the frustration probably being a lot worse than it actually was, Walks, because of the anticipation, trailing the whole game, not getting anything going, really. Yeah, they played, you know, not as well as they should. It wasn't an abject disaster type of performance. And then last night, they just took care of business. And we talk about how things devolved in the end, but they look like the better team last night. And that gives you hope, now that you've seen it, that they should win this series.
They were the better team. Full marks for the win. it wasn't perfect, but once they go up 4-1, it was never really in doubt. Like, I know Kevin Fiala scored a couple late goals, but I'm not, you know, I'm not worried about it at all. It's a reminder that you have to watch Kevin Fiala, and he is by leaps and bounds the most dangerous player the Minnesota Wild have. So they did a really good job on him through 2.5 periods. So you just can't forget about Kevin Fiala. But, you know, Tyler Myers hits that empty net, and it's a 5-2 win instead of 4-3, and it doesn't matter. It's all the same. If they made it a one goal game with, like, you know, a minute to go, and they were in danger of giving up the lead, then, yeah, we can have that conversation. But, you know, it was a two-goal lead with 7 seconds to go. The game was over.
Yeah, for all intents and purposes, that game was done when it was 4-1. Those final two goals, yeah, and it was a little bobble at the end by Markstrom. Like, I get it if you're a Canucks fan who has seen some heartbreaking failures and you have seen some things you never expected to go against you. You know, I can forgive that nervousness in that moment, but it was never really in doubt. I was never really worried about it. We're doing the show from the station yesterday. We're watching it, you know, in the prep lounge. Like, I got up with 30 seconds and started getting set up in the studio again for the post game show. Like, I wasn't worried at all about that game falling apart. But the thing it highlights, though, Walks, and this is something the Canucks are going to have to rectify, regardless of how good they've been at even strength, not giving up, you know, a 5-on-5 goal so far through two games. They're giving up way too much when they're down a man. Whether it's on the PK, 5-on-4, or when there's an extra attacker, you know, through two games, that has been an issue for the Canucks.
Yeah, well, and I'd like to just see them stay out of the box, you know, regardless. This has been the one part of this, you know, first couple of games that hasn't felt like the playoffs is that, you know, the referees are calling everything. It does feel like a regular season, if not a preseason game in that sense. We're used to seeing, you know, these guys kind of, you know, a little bit more go in the playoffs. So I'd like to see a little bit more discipline, you know, making sure you have two hands on the sticks, you know, things like that. Because last night, Jay Beagle, Tyler Mott, you know, Sutter, Tyler Myers, those guys were terrific, the penalty killers. They did a really good job, I thought, against the Minnesota Wild last night. You just don't want to put them in that position again.
It was way too much pressure on him, right?
And if you are, because I got some texts and some tweets today, and people say, yeah, I'm kind of worried about the last two goals. I mean, Minnesota gets it going, and Kevin Fiala and momentum. If I really don't believe that momentum carries over too much in a playoff series like this. I mean, I get it. It's one thing when you're down 3-0, and all of a sudden it's 3-2, and you're worried about choking things away. I understand that. But if you are a Canucks fan and you're worried about the Wild momentum, you should actually hope that momentum carries over. Because, yeah, Kevin Fiala scored late twice, but Canucks were terrific for, you know, 53, 54 minutes. You should hope that carries over into Game 3. The bad news is I don't think either carries over. Game 3 is an entirely new organism. It's new flow. It's a new game. I think the only thing you can take away is that, you know, Alex Stalock isn't in your head. Even if he was in your head, you know that you can beat him easily if you need to.
It's become a best of three right now. That's where you're at, and nobody really has the edge as far as emotional readiness or whether you're feeling like you need retribution from a tough loss. You're down in a series and your back's against the wall. You're 1-1. So Minnesota, you know, they had the 1-0 lead. They probably feel like they could have done better, and perhaps they could have gone up 2-0, and that's a missed opportunity. But they're just looking ahead and saying, well, it's a 1-1 series. We've got to go out and win Game 3. For the Canucks last night, it was pretty much a must-win. Like, we know it's going to be really hard to come back from being down 0-2 in a best of five. Like, it's you're in a really tough position. So the Canucks last night had the desperation on their side, and they showed up and played with that desperation and with that focus, and they ended up getting it done. I wonder what that emotional level is going to be like for Game 3. Does it settle in a bit more? Do we see as much intensity right off the bat? Because this series has been physical, but even every single physical series, even if it's a 5 or 7-game series, Walks, every game can't be at that level. Like, every game is not going to be a slaughter.
Andrew Walker, Satyar Shah, 650-650 if you want to weigh in on this on the text line. We'll take your phone calls as well, 604-280-0650. How you feeling? We know how you were feeling the day after the loss. We took your calls. We took your texts. How are you feeling the day after a win? Canucks get right back into this best of five, and game three is set for an 11:30 puck drop tomorrow. There's a couple games ongoing right now, or at least one game. Dallas and Colorado in a seeding game right now, and then Pittsburgh-Montreal game three in that series set to go on Sportsnet at the top of the hour. Then later on tonight, Edmonton-Chicago. This should be a great one. They're tied at one, a 7:30 puck drop. Speaking of Edmonton, did you see the 50-50 today?
What? How high did it go? They're expecting it to get up to almost $10 million.
They cut it off. It's at $5.5 million. And they put a moratorium on it. They cut it off. I saw a great tweet today. It's like the Edmonton, I guess they're not the Eskimos anymore, the Edmonton football team and the CFL should be doing a 50-50 in Edmonton to, like, save the league. Because if you want to raise $10 million, it seems to be an easy way to do it. Like, so I grew up in – I love 50-50s. You know me. And I grew up in the West, you know, born and raised in Saskatchewan. Then I worked in Alberta for 10 years. And the West, the Prairies, love 50-50s. Saskatoon, Edmonton, Calgary, the kings of 50-50s. And then over the last couple years here, for whatever reason, there was kind of some big guaranteed jackpots at Canucks games, and momentum went, and the Sedin game and all that. And Vancouver set a couple of 50-50 records getting up over $1 million. And I was super impressed as someone from the Prairies. I was like, you know what? Vancouver people get on board with this. And then Edmonton sets the new the new standard this week. $5 million for a hockey game. What's happening?
Well, you got nothing else to spend your money on. So, you know, you may as well.
I'm just kidding. That's so lazy. Unlike Vancouver, where you have, like, rent, you have plenty of things to spend.
You have things to do. No, but I mean, hey, listen, in this situation right now, within a pandemic, you're staying home a lot more. You're not spending money on too many other things. But, you know, Edmonton, great. You're the kings of 50-50. Congratulations. Awesome. I'm happy for you guys.
So good. I wish I could buy, to be honest, $5.5 million.
If you have family at Edmonton, get them to buy it for you. And then they can collect. And then be like, hey, I'll give you 20% or whatever.
I do have family in Edmonton. Although I think the cutoff is already gone. I'll buy one in the morning for the Canucks 50-50. So 650-650 is the text line. Duncan texts in. He says, must win game two. Out of the way, two more to go. Richard in Vancouver says, I'm feeling much better today. Best of three. Nice to see the Canucks score and win. It's been a long time. And still a long ways to go. This one is an unsigned text. They have to do something about the power play. I would agree with that. We'll talk about that. And Jared in Langley, but right now in a Soyuz, says, I don't agree with Andrew much, but I agree the Canucks looked mediocre versus a not very good Wild team. Certainly in game one. I thought last night they were terrific.
Yeah, and game one they were mediocre. Yeah. But to me, the big story from that game, from individual performances, still goes to Pettersson. And you know what? We're going to play back a lot of clips throughout the show from Travis Green today. And there's a lot of things to get into, but specifically on Besser, on Pettersson, even Louis Erickson, everybody's favorite little helper. And, you know, Alex Edler's physicality. But to me, the big takeaway from individual performances was Elias Pettersson just asserted himself again last night.
Well, let's hear from Travis Green. This was on playoff Pettersson last night in his second career game. Okay, that's coming up in a second. But you're right. I mean, and even I thought we felt, I don't know about you, but I felt smart because we talked on the pregame show for a couple of hours where Vertanen was in and Louis was in, and you know, some people wanted Yalevi for Fantenberg and all this garbage. Like that stuff, sure, it fills up time, it keeps us it keeps us interested, all of that. But for the Canucks to win this series, all that stuff is window dressing. It comes down to Pettersson and Miller and Besser and Markstrom and Hughes. Like, if those guys are average, the Canucks aren't going to beat the Minnesota Wild. It all comes down to that. And last night they were all good, and Pettersson was tremendous. Here's the Travis Green clip on Elias Pettersson's level of compete.
This is a young man that a young offensive, you know, hopefully future top player in the league. He already is one of the, you know, top guys in our mind in the league, and he's still getting better. He's still a young man that's learning to play in the league. Gets a lot of attention from the other teams during the regular season. Has gotten a lot of attention so far through the two games from Minnesota, which is what you'd expect from a team that's trying to win. I think he's handled himself very well. He's competed hard. He's gone into hard areas. Hasn't shied away. Has shown that he can play this style of game. And he's, you know, he's been a really good player for us for two games here. And I'm always impressed with his skill level. And I think I've been anxiously waiting to see how he does at this type of hockey. And it's been impressive so far. And he's going to continue to get attention from the other team. That's the way it is. All the good players in the league, they get attention from the other team during playoff hockey even more than the regular season. And he his compete level is high right now. And it's been impressive so far. And I have no doubt about him going forward either.
So that's head coach Travis Green on Elias Pettersson. And he was so good in all facets at. And it's funny. It's one of those games where, you know, Pettersson's the type of player. I think Quinn Hughes is this too. Where those guys can have a bad game and just not be very good at all. Then you look in the score sheet, you're like, oh, wow, they had 3 points somehow. Like, guys fall into that. Last night, Pettersson only had the one assist. It was not a banner statistical night, but he was so good. I had tweeted out last night that Pettersson, you know, was a version. Like, he did for the Canucks last night in a must-win game what Connor McDavid did for the Oilers in game two against Chicago. Now, different. McDavid came out and scored two beautiful goals, including one of the best goals of all time, and had a hat trick. And so people, you know, responded, Pettersson's not as good as McDavid. Not what I'm saying.
No,
but
that, like, was a good, that was you good. Can, that was a great tweet. That was
you,
a great tweet.
You can lift
I'm
your...
Gonna, I'm going to retweet that again right now, because that's how good that tweet was.
You can lift your team in a bunch of different ways. And, you know, Pettersson didn't have a million goals, but, man, he drew three penalties. He set the tone physically. He set up the Besser goal. He had a great defensive play early. Had a better defensive play to start the rush for JT Miller's go-ahead goal. He was just he was all over the place.
Playoff PD, he lived up to the hype. And more than anything, Walks, he's defining his own identity. You mentioned one assist. He only has one assist in two games. But every time he's on the ice, he's making a massive impact. That back check he had to come and take away a grade A scoring chance right in front of the net, that was next level effort. Watch that game and his physicality the whole time. He has served notice playing physical hockey that he belongs in the same conversation, as you mentioned, with players like Connor McDavid right now in the playoffs. We often compare him to past greats like Datsyuk and even Forsberg with, you know, how physical he plays. But he's a unique player, man. Like, I'm not telling people what to do and what to say and stop comparing him to people. But Elias Pettersson is uniquely his own player. He's like Datsyuk to some degree, but he's also like Forsberg to some degree. But he puts everything together, and he is just such a graceful player. Look at his entries, for instance. Look at his passes in the defensive zone trying to get out of his own zone. Everything he does is next level, and he's added that physical element in the postseason as well. So I look at Pettersson. To me, all he did was affirm that he belongs amongst the great players in the league right now in that conversation.
And, you know, even with that tweet last night, like, I'm not comparing him to McDavid because I hate getting ahead of ourselves, okay? I think that Elias Pettersson is a franchise player. We're lucky to have him in this city. And last night was very much a get-on-my-back performance. Now, there are other guys like that in the league. I'm not saying there's not. Sebastian Aho is that guy. Connor McDavid obviously is that guy. You know, Matthew Tkachuk, I feel, is that guy. Like there are players that are doing similar things around the league, but though you need that. Like, you have to have the prerequisite to be a team that goes in any semblance of a playoff run. You have to have star players that do not shy away from the spotlight. And last night was a... Because here's the thing. Pettersson could have a bad series, Sat, and they could lose to Minnesota, and we all get down in the mouth about the team and everything like that. It doesn't take away from Pettersson. You know he's going to get there eventually, but to pass that test so quickly, you know, game two, round one, we expect him to be great again in game three. It just it matters. It goes a long ways.
Well, it absolutely does. But when you have your top players play with that type of intensity, that type of emotion, battle through things, and I know the Hartman play got a lot of run towards the end, and you know, I'm sure we can talk about it at some point, but he battles back. And when you see your top guys do that, it does give another boost. And if you're anybody else, what excuse do you have if Elias Pettersson, with his frame, is playing with reckless abandon? What excuse do you have if you're anybody else on that team to not show up on that given night?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was not a lot of passengers last night, and there was in game one.
Yeah, and you know, it stood out. Even JT Miller, like that goal JT Miller scored, it all amazing shot. JT doing his thing, beautiful, like chef kiss on the release, posting in, just a beauty. But that play happens because Pettersson is pressuring the hell out of Galchenyuk, forces a turnover, drives straight to the net, but then he stops right in front of the net and he causes havoc, creates a bit of issue for the goalie and the defender who was there, and then Miller comes in, drags Dumba, and then rifles it in. That all happens because of defensive effort and then a smart, simple move of taking your ass to the net. Mm-hmm. Like, it's simple stuff, right? But look at what happened out of it.
And if he keeps going, like, who knows? Maybe he gets a goaltender interference call or something like that.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Yeah. So from the good news to the tough news, no Tyler Toffoli last night. No Adam Gaudette. Now, we would have scratched him anyway, but it sounds like he might also be banged up, which takes away an option from Travis Green. Michael Ferland left and reportedly didn't skate today, and Antoine Roussel, you know, left last night as well. Playoff time, it's difficult to get injury news at the best of times, let alone in a pandemic bubble where teams aren't required to do anything. So there's a lot of questions being floated out there right now, a lot of speculation on how banged up the Canucks are. I'll say this, Sat. You know, Ferland out of sight, out of mind. We've literally never been able to see Michael Ferland at his best, so it's too bad. So, but in that sense, I don't want to say they won't miss him, but man, we don't even know what Ferland really brings to this team when healthy. To be honest, we saw a spirited fight and a spear in game one. That's what we saw. I will say this: thank God that the defense has been healthy so far. That's the big thing for me. Edler, Tanev, yeah. Myers, Quinn Hughes. Those guys are hugely important.
And even Oscar Fantenberg had a decent game last night, as far as what you expect from him. But the defense being healthy is huge, and Markstrom being healthy, you are going to get injuries. It's going to happen. As far as Gaudette goes, honestly, I don't know if he's injured. Like, I don't know for sure. I can't say. And because of the information vacuum that goes on right now, and not a lot gets released, and the Canucks have a very tight-lipped about things, it's hard to say one way or another. I'm just doubtful that he's actually, you know, significant. Like, there's an injury keeping him out. Like, I do think coaches can use the unfit to play to their advantage, whether we think it's right or wrong. That's kind of the position we're in right now. So I'm not sure what to believe on Gaudette. But on Ferland, I'm not expecting him to play on Thursday. And as far as Toffoli goes, I don't know, man. I'm not expecting that either. You might have a better sense on that than I do.
Some breaking news on Michael Ferland, as per Elliot Friedman. You just tweeted, hearing Michael Ferland will be leaving the bubble due to injury. The forward played just four shifts and 2 minutes and 36 seconds. No clarification on specifics.
Man,
yeah, not surprised.
No, not good. And
not good. I mean, we don't know what it is. I don't want to speculate, but we can definitely draw the parallels that, you know, we didn't really see anything. There wasn't really a big injury, so why does he have to leave? You can put two and two together. Yeah. And that's why I was pessimistic about him, you know, obviously playing on Thursday. So now, don't expect to see him anytime soon.
Interesting stuff. We'll react to that. 650-650 is the text line. And, yeah, I mean, as far as Toffoli goes, man, I've heard some stuff. I've done some double checking as best I can. But I can't. I just can't, you know, confirm what I think right now. So I can't really talk about it. So I don't really know what's going on with Tyler Toffoli either.
Yeah, that's a tough spot. All we know is that Toffoli definitely is banged up, and he, you know, by all accounts, he wasn't at practice the other day. I mean, at the morning skate, even yesterday too, right? So you start putting, you know, a couple of things together, it's pretty obvious that he's also unlikely to be an option. But Travis did mention a couple of guys could be skating, so I'm expecting Gaudette to be skating, and I wouldn't be surprised if Roussel skates.
More of your texts, more of your phone calls as well. Get in line if you want, 604-280-0650. 650-650 is the text line. This one comes in. I text in from the Spectrum. He says, I text in often criticizing Brock, Besser, that is. Both games, he was competing hard. I saw contact. I'm impressed on the intensity level. Always love the show. Thanks for the text. Spectrum, more of that when we come back. And also, he played in a Stanley Cup final. Sat with the Vancouver Canucks back in 1994. And the veteran Tim Hunter, 16 years in the NHL, and a Stanley Cup champ a few years prior in Calgary. He is going to join us when we come back. The program on your home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back. The program continues on your home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. It's 4:34 on your Wednesday. Andrew Walker, Satyar Shah. Don't forget, big day of Canucks playoff hockey tomorrow. An early start, 11:30 a.m. for game number 3. So Sat and I will be on the air at 9:30. We'll be joined by Ed Jovanovski and Yannick Hansen for a two-hour pregame show. I'm not sure exactly who will be taking over from, if the starting lineup goes a little long or if Scott Rintoul does a half-an-hour show. Not sure at this moment. But the game will be on, and then we'll take you deep into the night with the postgame as well. So big day, big swing game in this series.
Yeah, and we're going to have reinforcements join us a bit later on. We'll have Randy.
Maybe.
We'll see. Once we get past a couple hours of the post game, we might let those guys get some shine as well. I mean, they've been working hard.
Working hard or hardly working? Am I right?
Hardly working.
Am I right?
Am I right? Nudge, nudge, elbow, dad joke.
650-650 is the text line if you want to weigh in. Still taking your feedback after a really fun, solid game two last night for the Vancouver Canucks. You want to know, want an example of how the game has changed in the NHL? The penalty minutes leader in the NHL this year was Evander Kane. You know how many penalty minutes he had?
102.
122 was the leader. Right. He also led the league in penalty minutes last year with 153. Antoine Roussel last year was third with 118. These guys aren't even like fighters, right? They're not even enforcers. They're. But anyway, so yeah, 122 led the regular season NHL this year. Our next guest, who's going to join us in a few minutes, is Tim Hunter, former Vancouver Canuck. He had in the 1986 playoffs with the Calgary Flames, the playoffs, 108 penalty minutes in the playoffs, not in the regular season. He had 291 in the regular season. He had 108 in the playoffs.
It's insane. I don't think a single Canuck even had 100 penalty minutes this season.
Oh, no chance. No chance.
Okay, what do you think the highest penalty minute for a Canuck player was this season? I'm looking at it right now.
Okay, all right. So it's not...
And Vic, you get in on it too.
It's not Roussel because he missed too much time. I'm trying.
So there's two guesses. Who led the team in penalty minutes and what were those minutes?
Okay, I'm going to say it was... God, is it going to be someone who like took the most minor penalties or something? I'm going to say... Hang on. I'll say Tyler Myers with 65.
Okay. Bic, you got one?
I actually already know the answer, so I will abstain from guessing.
Okay. It was Alex Edler. 62 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
Minutes were close. But he did it in 59 games. So Alex Edler in 59 games has 62 penalty minutes.
But he didn't even fight.
No, it's just I saw minors.
Yeah, maybe, and then maybe there's 110 in there.
There might be, you know, yeah, like a five and a two double. You got a couple double minors, I think.
I know. I know the game is better, but I don't know if it is. It's embarrassing.
Yeah, it's rough.
Andrew Walker and Satyar Shah, our next guest, 16 years in the NHL, won a Stanley Cup with the Calgary Flames in 1989, and then saw the error of his ways, and 3 years later, Came to the Vancouver Canucks and played in the Stanley Cup final with them. He is the great Tim Hunter. He joins us on Sportsnet 650. How you doing, Tim?
Boy, I like that. The great Tim Hunter. Wow. Thank you.
we were just talking about how, well, man, the game has changed so much. The league leader in penalty minutes this year was Evander Kane. He had 122. I was looking at your stats. You had 108 penalty minutes in one playoffs. What's happened? What's happened to the world?
Well, there's so many good players through the lineup now. There isn't room for those old slugs that we used to be, and and the you know, having two and three enforcers on a team at a time. No, the game is so much faster, better. The players are smarter, more disciplined. There's more teams. Obviously, when I broke in, there was only 21 teams, and now there's going to be 32 shortly.
So when obviously these pandemic playoffs are a little different, Tim, from anything we've seen before. But when you were playing in Vancouver, you went on three playoff runs, including the Cup final in '94. What do you remember the most about playoff hockey in Vancouver in that time period?
Well, even then, you know, you're in your own kind of bubble. You're in your own little world because you isolated yourself from. You know, a lot of times we'd stay at the hotel away from our families and just kind of hunker down and have a bit of a road mentality where everyone was together. We spent a lot of time together and you got to think and talk about the game, and, you know, before and after as a group. So it's not quite the bubble they're in now, but, you know, it was much the same. And, you know, we really stayed close and Pat was just a master of handing the team over to the players and making us accountable to each other and making us kind of steer the ship. Now, obviously, he had the, you know, the X and O's and the motivation. But just as far as us being a close group and the leaders making sure everyone was involved, you know, and that's what you see in the, you know, right now these guys are, you know, they're more than close. They're spending so much time together. I think it's great. You know, we didn't have a mandated thing where everyone stayed at the hotel, but a lot of guys decided to stay at a hotel even when the games were at home. We'd skate in the morning, then we'd stay in the hotel in the afternoon. Then you'd go home after the game, obviously. Game day, we were kind of in that game mentality. It's different now, obviously. It's a once-in-a-lifetime thing, and I hope I never see it again.
You're right. I mean, we all hope we don't ever see this stuff again. But one of the things a lot of guys talk about, like yourself, is remembering those moments when you were together on the road a lot, and especially in the playoffs, and you're kind of going through these battles together. So from that aspect, and as an even playing field for all these teams, because they're all kind of going through the same thing again, but how important does that kind of become as far as how well guys work as groups, how well they not necessarily get along at all times, but respect each other and able to kind of move forward as a group? Because this is even more intense than ever before, because they're never leaving their bubble, as opposed to you would have a chance to go see your family a bit, even if you wanted to, you know, when it's not a pandemic.
Well, that's just it. And any team that's ever successful, the first quote you'll hear them say about what made them successful is because they're a close-knit group. And, you know, each and every team is going to have its own little thing that brings them together or galvanizes them, whether it's a loss or something, some symbol or something that brings them all together, or, you know, somebody that they're trying to, you know, win for that's been important to them. Those are all galvanizing things that bring teams closer together. And the teams that have great leadership and that have coaching staffs that are able to use the little things to help galvanize the team. And, you know, right now there's lots of penalties being taken and there's lots of fighting going on, which is it's uncharacteristic of the way the regular season went. So more fights this year so far than, you know, probably last year in the early going. But I think it's because the stakes are on the line. Teams are playing hard and the teams that are smart and teams that are disciplined that can play on the edge and not go over the edge will be the teams that have success. But it starts with guys, you know, being in the room and making sure they don't want to let the guy beside them down or the guy across from them down.
Tim Hunter is our guest on Sportsnet 650. How much of that is due to the fact that Like, these teams got to get themselves going emotionally. There's no crowd to feed on. The series are so short. They don't want to be caught in this, hey, we're playing, you know, some elements of summer shinny. Like, we've seen, you're right, a bunch of fights, and it's almost like, you know, these players really want to make sure they drag themselves into the competition.
Yeah, there's no tomorrow. I mean, it's, you know, the best of five series is, you know, you blink and it's over. And, you know, back in the day, we're involved with them. You know, we won a big one in 86 to start the playoffs to beat Winnipeg. You know, we won three straight, but, you know, they had a hell of a team. And, but we made some trades, got John Tinelli and a couple other guys and just down the stretch. And, you know, we became a real close team real quick you know, the details are really important. And, you know, I'm not going to pat myself in the back, but the foot soldiers and the guys that are, mm-hmm. you know, those guys that go out and block shots and kill penalties and take a punch to score a goal or to draw a penalty, or take a hit to make a play, a big play, get a puck out or what have you. You know, it's not always the star players. Those star players have enough pressure on them to score and come up with the big plays. But the foot soldiers are really important in creating that momentum that they go out and do their part. And that's the difference now in the game than it was, you know, when I played, is the fourth line guy can skate as well as the top line guy, with the exception of McDavid, because nobody can skate as well as him. But everyone can skate well, and everyone can check. So if you're not a goal scorer, you better be checking hard, taking a hit, giving hits, and doing those little things to help your team win, because that's all necessary on winning in hockey today. And the teams that have the guys that are willing to do those, you know, those kind of unspectacular and things that don't show up in the score sheet duties, those are the teams that'll win.
And how much more compelling does it kind of become when your top players embrace that? You're right. You need to kind of go to a different level in the playoffs. You need certain players that find a way to be successful, even though the game has changed. But like last night, we're watching Elias Pettersson. We're watching even Brock Besser. I mean, you know, Jake gets in and does his thing as well. But you're seeing those young guys really embrace the moment. Pettersson's playing physical. He's getting on the forecheck, backchecking. When you see a guy like that, who's not typically known to be that aggressive, show that in the playoffs, I mean, he is the most talented player on the team. What kind of effect does that have throughout the roster, and what does that mean to a club?
Well, no question. And you know, the teams, and it goes from, you know, the details, everyone willing to commit to the details and not just worrying about, oh, I'm here to score goals. Everyone willing to play on the other side of the puck, the defensive side or the side that needs to get the puck back. And your star players do that. And that again makes the team closer, because those guys get the utmost respect from the foot soldier, because the foot soldier sure appreciates what they can do offensively, and then vice versa. And the goal scorers appreciate what the foot soldiers can do. And everyone, you know, taking the next step to do a little bit more, your job and then some, makes the difference. And, you know, when you got Jay Beagle and Brandon Sutter and those guys, they're going out and they're going to do everything they can to play well defensively, try to chip in some offense. It's going to be limited, but they're going to kill penalties. They're going to win faceoffs. They're going to get pucks in and out. And you're going to need that down the strokes, because the best players are playing against the best players most nights, and you're going to have to be able to play well away from the puck. And you know, the teams that get guys, their star players, to buy in right through the game, both sides of the puck, again, I keep saying, that are the teams that are going to win. And it's details, and it's the mandate that everyone does their job and then some.
How much of the... Yeah, Sat talked about Pettersson and kind of standing up to that physicality last night. How much of that was in Bure in that run? I mean, we all remember the elbow on Churla, Tim, which is, I mean, it's more, dirty than tough, maybe, but he also didn't shy away from making room for himself when he could.
Well, that was a galvanizing moment for Pavel's career and Pavel as a player. Pat Quinn came to me at the end of the year and he said, you know, it's playoffs, you know, you're going to have to, you know, make sure you're involved physically, some fights, and, you know, do your thing. You gotta do your thing in the playoffs and play hard and stick up for Pavel. And I said, yeah, I said, you know, Pat, I said, we got to get Pavel to play hard and play a little harder and not just take a whack and just shy away or just not show that, not that he was shying away, but he just doesn't show enough emotion that he cares when he gets whacked. And Pat says, okay, you do your part, I'll do my part. So he talked to Pavel and when he laid out, like Chirla was, I didn't play against Chirla. Chirla was the captain of their team. He was checking every time in Dallas, Pavel was on the ice, Chirla was on the ice. So unless I was going to play right wing with Pavel, that wasn't going to happen because, you know, I couldn't keep up them for one thing. So Pavel took things in his own hand and he did, was a dirty play. It was amazing. He never got penalized, never got fined, never got suspended for it.
Man, he'd be thrown out of the league today. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, they give him life. We're trying to help out. You know, that's a Gordie Howe elbow. I've seen Mark Messier do that in an exhibition game, and he got 5 minutes, but that was it. But so that's the important thing that you show your teammates and you show the other team, you're not going to take any shit. You know, right. You got to play through it. You know, but you're not going to take abuse. You're not going to take in all the extra stuff, and you're going to play hard and you're going to play through it. But at the end of the day, you have to stand up for yourself. And Pavel sure did that, and that we were all just, it was jaw dropping during the game because you're watching, you see it, and you're kind of going, "Oh my God, he's going to get life. No penalty, no arm, nothing. Over." Then they're scraping Shane off. I'm a good friend of Shane. He's a wonderful guy. I love him.
He is a good guy. Yeah.
And man, he was out cold. So, you know, those are great things for Pettersson to, you know, I coached against him in the World Junior and I know what kind of player is. He plays hard, you know. A lot of people talk about Swedes being a little bit, you know, unemotional, and I love that player. He's a hell of a player. He's gonna be a hell of a player as he gets older and gets stronger.
Tim Hunter. Go ahead, Zat.
No, I mean, on the Burry thing, and, you know, Pedersen's a lot different because it's not the same situation, but how much did the perception change around players that went after Burry after that? Like, did somebody, like, almost think twice to some degree about really targeting Pavel because they knew they might get an elbow in the face?
Well, they knew that he just wasn't going to take any shit, and he could outskate anybody, and very smart and crafty. I remember playing with Kent Nielsen. Kent Nielsen was the first guy. And he said, I said, so what do you do when, you know, these guys, I said, you're chatting with some guy and he's trying to, you know, tell you he's going to kill you and do this and that and the other thing. And he's like, I just say, listen, you ever get in the shooting lane and I have the puck, I'm going to hit you right between the eyes with the puck. So you want to mess with me, that's what's going to happen to you. I'll hit you right between. And guys knew because Kent could hit the crossbar from center ice three times in a row. So he wasn't messing. He knew. They knew. So those are the things, you know, the smart guys, you know, like, you know, I've coached Alex Ovechkin, and he just says, don't go there with me, pal. I'm 230 pounds, and I'm as thick as I am tall. I'll crush you, so don't go there.
Tim Hunter joins us. Before I let you go, like, so, you know, 800 games and you had over 3,000 penalty minutes. I'm sure, you know, anytime you do an interview or something or someone comes up to you in a bar, they want to talk about your fights and fighting and all that kind of stuff. You scored 62 goals over the course of your career, but in the 1988 playoffs, you had 4 goals in 9 games. What happened? Did you get hypnotized? Like,
well, it's really funny. Hawk and Lou scored 4 goals as well, and I was tied for the lead in the team in playoff scoring. And Ron McLean did an interview with me, and he says, him, you know, the scoring touch, where did that come from? I said, well, my wife has got me doing more dishes at home, so it must be that palm olive is softening my hand. And boy, did he laugh. You know, it was just one of those games, and it was a gritty series, and I mean, I never scored a goal any further from 5 or 6 feet away from the net, so it wasn't like I blew down the wing like Lanning and ripped one by the goalie. They were all off my ass and in, or redirect, or rebound, and or it was laying on the goal line and pushed it across. That was about it. So just one of those lucky situations that I was able to gather up some points, and but it wasn't meant to be. We didn't win the series, so wasn't that great.
Hey, Tim, we appreciate it, man. Enjoy the rest of this Vancouver series or whatever hockey you're watching. We appreciate it.
Well, I'm trying to watch them all. I record them all, but there's so many games. I mean,
I'm
looking forward to Pittsburgh, Montreal. I'm watching, you know, I'm watching part of another game, and I got to do work in the yard, but it's great.
Well, put down the rake, crack a beer, because Pittsburgh, Montreal gets going about 5 minutes, so we'll let you get to it.
Yeah, good. I'm looking forward to it, because, well, it's 5 o'clock, so I'm done. So.
All right. See you, Tim.
Have a good night.
Bye. Bye. Tim Hunter. 16 years in the NHL. I'm fired up. I'm not taking any S going forward, Sat. I'll tell that.
None.
None.
You also punched somebody in the nameplate, and since that moment, nobody's ever decided to run up against you.
That's right. Come at me on Twitter. I'm not taking it anymore. I'm not doing it. right. Hey, before we go, let's get a quick update from the out-of-town scoreboard. We have an update for you. The Sportsnet 650 goal horn is brought to you by BC Diesel, your source for diesel repair and performance. So they played hard in these seeding games, Sat. It's not quite the same as these do or die series. I will admit that. Like, if I'm watching hockey, I'll go to the best of five series before I will one of these seeding games. But we can tell you that Jonas Donskoy has scored for Colorado, making it a 2-0 lead on the Dallas Stars. Still to come tonight, the Habs and the Penguins, and then the Oilers and the Blackhawks. We'll get into some of those series, and Patrick Johnson is going to join us as well to talk about the Vancouver Canucks win in Game 2 and what about this injury situation. We'll get into it next. Sportsnet 650. 5 o'clock hour, Patrick Johnson is going to join us on the program momentarily. Canucks insider from the Vancouver province. It's Andrew Walker, Satyar Shah. Big Canucks win last night, so this series with Minnesota. Tied up at 1. We're on the air bright and early tomorrow, 9:30 for the pregame show. And puck drop's going to be at 11:30. Now, this just came to me, but Sat, as I understand, yeah. British Columbia labor laws... Oh, no, we're done at 7, so that's 9:30. Okay, we're good. We're fine. Never mind. Oh,
okay, you thought we were putting a 12-hour shift in or something?
I thought we didn't get the appropriate break time before we began the pregame show last night. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, but all good. False alarm. False alarm.
False alarm, yeah. We stand down. I was just about to speed dial my lawyer.
Yes, we will be in studio tomorrow at 9:30. A lot of injury news for the Canucks, Sat. There was no Tyler Toffoli last night, and then the Adam Gaudette thing is a little murky because Travis Green said in the postgame last night he was unfit to play. But that could very much be, hey, I don't need to admit that I healthy scratched this young player, so I'm not going to do it, which, whatever.
Right.
And today, Elliot Friedman, in the last half an hour, tweeting that Michael Ferland is, he's done. He's left the bubble with an injury and has left the team. So, you know,
the Canucks have an official statement now from the Canucks, and it says, Canucks confirm Ferland is unfit to play for the remainder of the play-in series versus Minnesota. He has returned home and will be reevaluated following the series.
Right. So... again, we're getting the text 650-650, and there's a lot of the texts that just say, "Hey, Michael Ferland should retire. Time to hang it up." It's hard, man. It's tough. You know, he.
I mean, we don't know what it is, but it's hard not to draw the parallels, right?
Yeah,
it's really hard not to.
It's either the it is either another concussion, which is, I mean, God, how many is that? Or it's or the guy's the most unlucky player ever, and it's a completely unrelated ailment, but one bad enough that he's now he has to recuperate from another injury. So,
right, like we've been doing the big picture, macro, micro, and in the moment conversation. But for Ferland, because we were, one of the things with Ferland was, hey, let's see what he looks like. Is he going to be part of the equation, or what can he be heading into next season? You know, that complicates things. And listen, I don't want to get too ahead, but that situation does pose a lot of question marks. We'll talk to Patrick Johnson coming up in a bit as well. The positive is, from just a monetary standpoint, contract-wise, well, they can put him on LTIR, so you have ways, if he can't play, for an extended period of time next season, that you can kind of deal with the cap that way. My question, though, because, he signed a pretty, significant contract, and he did have pre-existing conditions with concussions, that contract, from a pure monetary standpoint, I wonder how much insurance it does have, and that can pose other questions in a pandemic when, you're trying to figure out how much money an organization is making. So I think the Ferland one has a lot of layers to it, but the first and foremost one, quality of life for the man, right? Like, to me, that's where I'm at with him. And I don't know if this truly is a concussion or not and how bad it is. Nothing has been revealed. But well, I just hope the guy with a young family is going to be okay, number one. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, that's what it is.
There's reports out there now, some various insiders saying reports say, or sources say, that Ferland is experiencing the same problems. So that would lead you to believe that it's another concussion issue. We're officially in the camp now. I'd be incredibly surprised, and not even pleasantly surprised, just surprised, if Michael Ferland ever plays another game for the Vancouver Canucks.
Yeah. So, if he can't play, like I said, you can, the cap hit you can manage because you can put him on LTIR. From a pure money standpoint, though, and that's a question that somebody else has to answer, how much of that contract can truly be insured? Mm-hmm. And, that has an effect. So the Ferland situation is something that the team's going to have to deal with, even if this is a long-term thing. But that's rough news, man. It really is. Because I was just hoping he's going to be okay. And we cringed watching him fight in that game. Man, honestly, it sucks. That's all I can say right now. It really sucks.
Before we get to Patrick Johnson, the good and bad news, I mean, there's no good news in this, but the bad news is, I was really starting to convince myself that Ferland was going to just be this found money, and a big contract, $3.5 million a season isn't found money, but we had literally never seen him play in any type of effective stretch of the Vancouver Canucks. And when he came out in game one and threw down the gauntlet and fought and then speared what's his name on the bench and really got involved, I really thought that we were going to see an impactful Michael Ferland in this series, maybe even a bit of a throwback to 2015. The bad news is you're not going to get that boost at all. The good news is everything you've accomplished as a team this year, it's been without Michael Ferland. So it's not like they're taking anything from the lineup. It sucks, though. Let's bring in Patrick Johnson from the Vancouver Province, our Canucks insider. Injuries was kind of the story of the day yesterday, and that release just coming down. It's tough, man, especially what we watched in game one. It looks like everyone's worst fears are kind of coming true for the Ferland situation.
Yeah, it sure sounds like it. Hard to imagine what else it is. I mean, I think as a few other people have sort of said, well, there was chatter on the broadcast about maybe there being a blocked shot. But when I went back and looked at the four shifts he played, I never saw anything that looked like him blocking a shot. I think in the end, we have to go with the last information we knew with him, which was that, he struggles with a lot of movement in front of him. That was what was causing him issues during the regular season. And that, as he calls it, it's your vestibular system. It has to do with essentially your ability of your eyes to track multiple objects at once. You get dizzy. You almost feel drunk was how he put it. So it's terrible to hear. If there's a silver lining, was that he didn't seem to be having these problems at home with his family. And, that's what's most important right now, is that he's able to be able with his family and live a full life, even if he can't play hockey anymore, which, you in the end hope is not the case, but it's hard to see given that this is now three attempts to play hockey since last December, and all three have ended in similar circumstances.
Well, it's just, you know, from a human element, it's just tough to see somebody go through this yet again. And I just hope from that side that he's going to be all right. But obviously it has an impact on the team, you know, long term or not. And, you know, they gave him a 4-year contract. And, you know, you can't predict how things are going to unfold. But he did have the conditions in the past. And, you know, I wonder as far as the contract goes and, you know, the level of insurance that's involved. Like, now what we're talking about, a new world, PJ, where revenue streams are different. And you can put him on LTIR, that's fine. But if you can't get out from some of that money, like these things become bigger issues today than they may have been a couple of years ago, potentially.
Absolutely. You know, I mean, I think when you signed this contract, it was a bit of a roll of the dice. I think we all knew that. You know, a player who did have some worries about concussion history, and I think was dealing with a few other issues coming from Carolina, is my understanding. You know, and so at the end of the day, you know, you're going, okay, well, hopefully this player can meet the term of the contract. But yeah, if I think as both you and I have been hearing that there may not be a full load of insurance on this deal, you know, that's going to be tough, especially now with no fans in the building, no real revenues other than what you're getting out of perhaps, you know, off TV and, you know, whatever other revenue streams you can get out there. It's going to be a pinch. I mean, it was no accident that last week they moved to start laying off people because they know what the sort of near future looks like. And, you know, there's the business case argument for it that, you know, that I guess you make sense. There at the same time, I think a lot of people swing on the other time, you know, other time, is this really a time to be thinking in pure business terms? Anyway, that's another story. But yeah, when it comes to that contract, you know, that's going to be $12 million still to be paid, or, you know, $12 million all told being paid out. And the guys played 16 games.
Patrick Johnson joins us here on the program. Andrew Walker, Satyar Shah. Game 3, Canucks and Wild, will be on the air tomorrow, 9:30 a.m. for the pregame show. Last night, we talked on the pregame show for a couple hours last night. We both expected the Canucks with a big bounce-back win, Patrick. That was kind of the theme around the NHL in these game twos, and we also kind of expected Pettersson to really step up and lead the way. And it, for once, we were smart. It was that's exactly what happened. Pettersson was a beast last night. It was a coming out party of sorts.
100%. I mean, we saw a strong performance, I think, on Sunday. That was one of the things that kind of got lost. And, you know, we heard Travis Green talk about the idea of fine lines, which, you know, I think made some of us chuckle because it was a return to what Carl Robinson used to always talk about with the Whitecaps. But he's not wrong. You know, there, when you look at results and process, there's very few things that often distinguish a win from a loss. The Canucks didn't look good in game one. I don't think there's any doubt about that. They struggled to get to the slot. They struggled to generate quality opportunities. They didn't have any power plays. Last night, they had a ton of power plays. They had a ton of chances. You know, at 5-on-5, I think they still, in general, looked better. They certainly, the energy felt better. You know, the numbers aren't all that different if you look at the two different games. But on Sunday, Elias Pettersson was a dominant player, even if he didn't score. Last night, everything clicked. And, you know, you think about the impact he made, you know, just rushing the net on JT Miller's goal, you know, the depth pass he made on the doorstep to help Brock Besser put the puck in the net. You know, there were other examples, you know, in terms of how he played. You know, just a player that I think we knew coming out of the summer break, if you will, the pause, you know, looked as strong as ever, perhaps better. A young player who understands very well the work required to take himself to that next level, that he has the skill set that will take him a long way. But to become great, you have to put in so much work and you have to be so focused and so dedicated on what you're doing in creating, you know, the player you want to be. And, you know, I think we're seeing the results of that. You know, and as we know, he's meshed so well with JT Miller all year. And Brock Besser being healthy, coming back, those two have had chemistry in the past. It was no surprise to me that that line really was firing all cylinders last night.
Well, and also, Brock Besser, the way he played, we've been talking about Besser since his rookie season, and he set the standards so high, the expectations so high with how well he played and how he scored. we haven't seen that shot in the first couple of games, you know, get wired past goalies the same way so far. But as far as his jump, his physicality, the way he has risen to the moment, the way how hard he's been playing, like, we're starting to see again, like, the best version of Brock Besser.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is a player that, you know, coming out of last summer, he told me very much about how important it was to him to get a real full start, that he'd had an off season that he wanted to have. But then, of course, dealing with his father, his contract situation, you know, it wasn't an easy start to the year. And yet, you know, he persevered. He showed lots of good stuff. But there were still moments, I think, where we all kind of said, oh, it's not quite, you know, where you want to be. This is a guy that I think, you know, he doesn't sort of brag about the work he puts in. That's not his character. You know, he's much more happy to talk about hanging out with his friends and his teammates and that sort of thing. But he told us, you know, I think he wanted to make it clear how much work he put in this year. You know, he, despite the circumstances, the challenges that the lockdown that they were dealing with in Minnesota, like in so many places around North America, that put on him in terms of how he could maintain his fitness and get stronger. And he worked hard to do both those things. And a player like him, like Pettersson, the quicker you are, the more, you know, honed in your body is in physical terms, the more things you can do. And I think we've seen that through two games. There's a zip to his stride. You know, we certainly saw last night that old Besser shoot from anywhere mentality. I mean, let's be clear, he shoots from anywhere, but where he's shooting from is almost always a great position. You know, this isn't a guy that's firing pucks off the boards towards the net, hoping maybe they hit the goalie and bounce in. This was a guy that looked like he knew what he was doing and fully deserved that goal, I think, as I tweeted at the time.
He is noticeably quicker. And yes. And honestly, the last couple of years, it's been a bit of an argument because I understand that, you know, fans want to support their guy. And kind of the thing has been, you know, Brock doesn't look like he's moving the same as his rookie season. And people say, no, it's just not his game. And he's more smart than that. But no, it is different. He is noticeably quicker right now than he has been for probably 2 years.
Yeah, I think that's totally right. I mean, you go back with the struggles he had even from his first year, dealing with little injuries that set back his off-season training. And, you know, for him to have a full, in many ways, a full summer to prepare for this return, you know, and the way he clearly took advantage of it as he was trying to last year, you know, I think to me tells us everything. That this is a player that really does believe it. I think the chatter that may have popped up there about, you know, perhaps the team has been thinking about moving on from him, whether that was in the past or more recently, that it had happened at all. You know, I think that really spoke to him, that this is something he wanted to prove. He says, this is the team that drafted him. He wants to be here. And he wanted to show, you know, that the team was right to sign him to that contract last year, that he's a guy that wants to be, you know, one of the best players on this team. And, yeah, we're seeing that so far.
So the Minnesota Wild are more than a speed bump, you know, and they took game one from the Canucks. But I think we saw best case scenario for the Canucks last night. Like they are clearly a better team, especially in the goaltending department and with the amount of dangerous forwards they have. Kevin Fiala is great, but the Canucks have many more guys that can hurt you. Would you be surprised at this point if the Canucks didn't not ride off into the sunset, but was that the turning point last night in that series?
I mean, it's so funny to think about turning points given, you know, we're two games in. I think, right. I think of both games, like I said, both games are such narrow, such sort of narrow margins really that, you know, who knows what's going to happen next, but in the end, the Canucks did do more to get to the middle of the ice. Kevin Fiala found some goals late in the game. You know, the Canucks probably sat back more than they should, but that's been how they do things. I think at the end of the day, it really is about what you do with the chances you get. And if you don't make many chances, you're not going to score. Kevin Fiala is a fantastic player, you know, a great physical player. And he talked a little bit about it on the media call this morning, you know, just about the reality of, of you know having to make things happen. He thought the Canucks checked him, you know, checked them overall much tighter than they did the night the game before, which you know is a compliment to the Canucks. So that has been a critique of how they play. So you know, Fiala forever is going to be a bit of an X factor. But you know, if you're going to have, you know, if you're going to win this series, you've got to, in the end, you've got to get good goaltending. You got to get great goaltending because we know that with Jacob Markstrom has been the key to successful here. You know, your power play has to chip in, and you know, you have to at least, you know, hold serve at 5-on-5.
And, you know, on 5-on-5, they've done a decent job overall as a team. And, you know, a guy that actually helps their 5-on-5 play is Louis Erickson. And, you know, it's so funny, right, PJ, because we look at Louis and we all know the conversation is the same one. The contract, terrible. And yes, it's going to be a big issue for you. But the fact that he can step in and play as well as he has defensively in a game without having played 5 months, like, there is a floor that Louis Erickson brings. And in this moment right now in this playoff with these guys being injured, especially Toffoli being out, again, this is not about the contract. But in this moment right now, believe it or not, Erickson has brought utility, at least for one game.
Absolutely. You know, I think, you know, it was funny. It was, again, that was another topic. You know, Horvat was asked, what is it about Louis that you know, makes your game steadier? And you can't quite put your finger. Louis's been around. You know, Louis still has all the talent, you know, of a guy that was a great player in this league. You know, his hands may not quite be there. His wheels may not quite be there. But he's got all the kind of brain power. You know, in soccer, they always talk about how, you know, the veteran, best, smartest players always end up sort of they move further back on the field and towards the middle because, you know, they can't deal with the speed on the outside anymore. Well, you know, I'm not exactly arguing that Louis Erickson should become a defenseman or perhaps become a center, but he is a player that, you know, has to adapt his game from what he once was. And, you know, for whatever reason, this does seem at times to be a case of the you know, the sum of the parts being greater than the parts themselves, right? I mean, this is a guy that, in the end, you know, helps that line make things happen. You felt a bit bad for Erickson having this stick snap on that 2-on-1. He's a guy that he's a smart player. He doesn't hurt the Canucks when he's in the lineup. He doesn't score. So from that standpoint, you know, given the contract, yeah, I suppose in relative terms he might hurt. But really, from a base level, he's a guy that doesn't make mistakes. He's a pretty good penalty killer. He's responsible defensively. He moves the puck. If he didn't have that huge contract, you would be perfectly fine with him turning out on your third or fourth line every night. And in many ways, the Horvat line is obviously the second line, and so you'd rather not have Louis there, but there are worse guys to put in that position.
So what do you do with the lineup going forward? I know we don't necessarily know if Gaudette is available or if that's a guy that they want in the lineup, and same goes for Roussel. Safe to assume that you know, Ferland is out. We don't expect Toffoli in game 3. What would you do if you had your way?
Well, I mean, Adam Gaudette was not good in Sunday's game. And, you know, there were moments this season where he clearly had work to do as a two-way player. We know he's a pretty good offensive talent, a nice depth forward with good hands, who sees the game really well, has improved his skating. But the defensive aspects still need work. So, you know, there is a case to get him back in. That said, you know, Travis Green is a big fan of Brandon Sutter, who is not the player he used to be, not the skater he once was, but still does a lot of good things well. I think is a perfectly fine as your fourth line center. In many ways, the way that line gets supplied really is your fourth line because Jay Beagle sees so much defensive action. Jay Beagle, to be perfectly honest, I wouldn't have both Sutter and Beagle in the lineup, but we know Travis Green is probably going to have both those guys in the lineup because he trusts them. They're sort of that dependable trust veteran thing. More than likely, I think we'll just see Zach McEwen come back in. We know they like the sort of energy and spunk that he brings, and he has showed a nice touch offensively. Certainly a player that we know has worked very hard to improve his game and has, I think, tangible results for that. I would more than likely see, if you're bringing one guy back in, it's going to be Michael Ferland. I just don't think there's any hope of Tyler Toffoli playing at all in the rest of the series. Antoine Roussel, I think there's every reason to think he'll be fine. I mean, I suppose he might have some swelling around that eye, but you know, if you're picking a guy, in the end, the least complicated move is to simply bring Zach MacEwen in, and you're not going to be wrong in doing that.
Well, and end of the day, I know people do like to harp on, you know, Sutter and Beagle and whatever, but 5-on-5 through two games, Travis Green's Canucks have not allowed a goal. Like,
yeah.
So they're doing something right there.
They are. I mean, I think, let's be honest, part of it helps. This is the Wild. I mean, the Wild are a good scoring team, but they're not a league-leading offense. They're an average offense. And, you know, they kind of, I can't remember who, somebody else has mentioned this, but in many ways, they're sort of like the ghost of Jacques Lemaire, right? This is a team that's trying to bore you to death. They don't let you get to the net. If you can get to the net, you're going to do great. But they really make life difficult in the slot, and they build their game out from the back, and they have a lot of defensively responsible players. They have players who are smart on the puck, but aren't, you know, flashy superstar type. They don't have a Pettersson type player. You know, Zach Parise was once a top offensive talent. Zach Parise is now a grizzled veteran. Eric Staal, same story, right? Mikko Koivu is their fourth line center. You know, it's a bunch of guys who've been around. It's a bunch of Louis Eriksson, perhaps, if you will. Maybe with a little more touch still around the net, but
right.
it's a bunch of smart guys on that team. But you're right. I mean, the fact remains the Canucks haven't given up a goal 5-on-5. I mean, that's a huge credit to them on the whole, what they've been able to do. I mean, we've talked about the struggles they had in that first game getting chances. And it's not like the Wild had, you know, any more dominant chances, really. I mean, they've had a couple more in each game, but it's not like they've been blowing the Canucks out of the water. And, you know, I think that, again, that becomes the issue. The Wild know that they've got to kill penalties better. They've got to take fewer penalties, kill them better, and they've got to make something happen on their own power play, which hasn't been very good this season. So, you know, it's going to be, I think, a tight series. I think it's going to go down the wire. I don't think this is one that's going to be done on Friday night.
He is Patrick Johnson from the Vancouver Province, our Canucks insider. So early tomorrow, mimosas and and breakfast bagels and hockey. How about that?
All right, fellas. Take care.
All right. See you later.
Strong.
Patrick Johnson joins us. He is right about the one thing. I don't know if the Canucks win tomorrow, and I don't know if the Wild win tomorrow, but I am preparing for a game 5 on Sunday. Like that's what everybody said when the series began. Oh, it's probably going to go 5. It's one of those things. It has to get there somehow, you know?
What, like, do you have the stomach for it? If your prediction was Canucks are going to win in 5, and then you're losing hope after game 1 or whatever. Like, do you have the stomach for it? Because
right.
That's what it is. Like, you have to have the stomach for playoff hockey. If you think your team's going to win and you say 6 or 7 games, that means you're going to lose a few games. It's going to get uncomfortable. That's part of the journey.
Yeah. No, it is funny, right? I predicted Canucks in 5, but I'm writing them off after they lose game 1, where they're going to have to lose another one at some point.
Right.
Yeah, that's how it goes. But, hey, it's a reintroduction into must-win hockey. We know that. Andrew Walker and Satyar Shah, lots to get to. I want to talk about, now we're going to talk to Chris Versteeg, former Chicago Blackhawk, among other teams. He's going to join us, talk about being a pest in the playoffs a little bit, and what happens when a star player like Pettersson kind of pushes back. So we're going to talk to Chris Versteeg, but I do want to talk about the back check heard around the world last night with Jake Virtanen. Are we making too big of a deal out of it? I know what Bic Nazar, host of Canucks.
Oh, I heard him and Scotty go after it. Get after
things.
It today.
Yeah, and we talked about it on the post game last night. We'll take your reaction as well. 650-650 on the text line when we come back. Sportsnet 650. Andrew Walker, Satyar Shah, home of the Canucks. Sportsnet 650. Bic Nazar is our producer, the host of Canucks Central at noon. He is with us as well. And Justin Morissette back at the Sportsnet 650 studios. Sat and I will be at those Sportsnet 650 studios. We were there till 1 a.m. last night. You kept calling, so we kept going on the post-game show. Yeah, 1:15. Yeah. It devolved.
So we're showing. We will go past 1. Keep calling. Yeah. We'll go even longer.
I'm actually, it's going to be one of those days where, like, you're going to need to, like, bank your sleep and have some coffee and some Red Bull. But let's say, you know, we get into a, say, let's say for a second, hypothetically, they beat Minnesota and they're in a, you know, a big game five or a big game seven in round two and it goes to overtime and they win, something like, I'm prepared to do the all-nighter. Remember the first time when you were like a preteen or whatever in elementary school, and you had a sleepover with your buddies and you stayed up all night and you were so like proud and you were, you know, the next day you were dead pretty much, but you're thought
miserable,
it was, yeah, you thought you it was it. Pretty cool to stay up all night.
Dude, I'm down. Canucks, okay, if like, when do you want to set this up for? I'll do it. I don't give
man,
a
man, oh no, no, it, man, man it has game. To be, it has to be, it has to be organic. It has to be organic, okay. But I'm picturing like a Friday night, series tied at two in the first round of the playoffs, and there's an overtime game, and yeah, you know, people are out anyway, and they keep calling, and right. So we keep going. I'm looking forward to, you know, you can't force it. It has to be organic, but I'm willing to do
I'm
it.
Down.
So
I'm
like,
down to do it.
You know how like lots of like songs, right? Like song lyrics. Right. It could be any genre, I guess. I'm thinking hip hop, but lots of genres where kind of the theme is like all night. Well, there's all night long, right? Like that's a song. But like the theme is like all night, and I've always thought that was very not believable, like not relatable, because I don't want to do anything all night. Even that, I don't want to do it all night. I want to go to sleep.
Actually very well rated.
Yeah, Marvin Gaye. Is it Marvin Gaye all night long? Is that who sings it?
Yeah, that's Marvin Gaye.
Yeah, I don't want to do anything all night long, but I will do the Canucks postgame show all night long if that's what it takes. Lionel Richie, Marvin Gaye. What am I?
It's Lionel Richie. Yeah, definitely.
What am I talking right, about?
Maybe. And I'm like, and I'm the idiot going, yeah, for sure, you're right. Like it's even worse.
Yeah, maybe Marvin Gaye covered it. I don't know. Our next guest is cringing probably on the line. He is Chris Versteeg, longtime NHLer, Stanley Cup champion. He joins us here on Sportsnet 650. Andrew Walker, Satyar Shah. How's it going?
Lionel Richie.
Yeah, yeah. That's name that tune is not my forte, all right. As you know. Yeah,
I'm good. How are you guys?
We're doing okay. We really didn't know Chris what this playoffs would look like, but the guys that are in that bubble and like they're getting themselves going. There's been more emotion than I thought. What about you?
Look, these guys are pros, man. They come to win. Doesn't matter where they are. I do get that it would be hard to do it without fans, but if you put the Stanley Cup on the line, I'm not shocked at all. I thought that these guys would be raring to go after 4 months and they'd be excited to play. And I mean, they've been playing great hockey. Obviously a couple series with a little bit more mistakes and let-ups, I guess, than others. But as a whole, it looks like these guys haven't missed a beat and they've been awesome to watch.
So your former team and your former buddies that were current buddies, the Hawks, they it's hard to believe. So they're 10 years removed from that first cup, and there's, man, the usual suspects, right? There's Taves and there's Kane and there's 37-year-old Duncan Keith, and they're still going strong and playing hard against Edmonton. No surprise, I guess.
No, it really isn't. And Kane and Taves too, they really love to rise to these challenges. I know Taves, especially in game one, you see him, he goes up against McDavid. I say he's hands down the best player in the world, not even close. And Taves takes it as a challenge, and he was the best player, arguably, on the ice in game one. In game two, they were beat by one guy, Connor McDavid. But overall, Kane was the better player of the two, Kane and Taves in game two. And as series goes on, these guys get better. They love challenges, and playing against these young superstars is a challenge for them. So I'm not shocked at seeing the way they're playing at all at this point.
There's something different about playoff hockey as well, and not just about, you know, how guys play, but just from that mental aspect too, and how far that goes. Like, because we all remember 2011 too. I mean, Blackhawks, 8 seed, Canucks, 3, you know, number 1 seed, win the President's Trophy. You know, the rosters weren't comparable, but well, the Hawks came back. You know that very well, Chris. But what is it about that mindset a few guys can have on a team that when they're in that position, even if the rosters don't quite stack up, they just find a way to make it a real series?
Well, the game's played on a different frequency in the playoffs. The emotion is so much higher, and some guys, they love that emotion. They feed on it, and that's why you see certain guys play a certain way in the playoffs, and other guys, the emotion can get to them in the nerves. So for myself and being around all those guys like Kane and Taze and the greats, and even when I got to go to Philly with Mike Richards and Jeff Carter and these guys. These guys thrive on emotion. They get better with it. They love the challenge, and that's why you see it. It is really a different game. It's just that much harder. Guys fight that much more, tooth and nail, and some guys can't emotionally go there, and some can, and the guys that can obviously are the best players and the guys who win the most.
In a long series, whether it's best of five or best of seven, it's so much different than just a one-off in the regular season because there's the physical element to it and wearing down an opponent, but also on the mental side too. So, you know, you were such a good pest. You did other things, but you were a good pest. Maybe not to like the Marchand level or even what Matthew Tkachuk is doing to Winnipeg right now, but you had your own element. How much does that play in, whether it's the chirping or the scrums after the whistle or always being there or trying to get on people's nerves? How much pride did you take into that, and how much effect does it really have?
I think it has an effect, especially the after the whistle stuff, the stuff you can say, the stuff you can do to guys to get in their heads. It has gone a little bit on the wayside now because the stuff after the whistle, they'll call a lot of unsportsmanlike. So the last few years, that's kind of gone on the way. But you know what? I actually have, especially in a couple series, the Vancouver one being it, seen a little bit more stuff after the whistle that they've let go on. And that stuff can start to play into a series. It can start to goat guys later on in the game into penalties. It can do other things that can really wrap guys' brains up in other aspects when they should be focused on the game. So the pest, especially in those days, it was very valuable. David Boland was one of the better ones I've played with that could do it at a high level and play the game, because there is a difference between just being a pest and being a pest second play. Because if you're a pest second play, it's a double-edged sword, and David Boland for me was the best that could do it, and it's not an easy thing to do.
Well, the bar has been raised so much higher. The baseline is so much higher than it was before. I mean, just to what you mentioned, just having a one-dimensional player doesn't quite fly anymore. You have to reach a certain baseline through everything, and then on top of that, have that separating skill, right?
Yeah, exactly. And the other thing with today, too, is you really the specialized nature of each player is going to a higher degree. Like, if you're a power play guy, too, you really hone in on the power play. There's guys that do both power play and penalty kill, but the specialized nature of the game is going to another level, almost like a football where they think, you know, not saying that that's what it is, but if you're a power play guy, you really focus in on that, and that's what they want to give you. They almost don't want to overwhelm the player with too much. They give them a specialty, and you really got to be the best at that specialty or someone's going to take your job, and that's what you got to do, though, in order to play in today's game.
Isn't that funny? Because there was a day not that long ago where if you called a guy a power play specialist, it was almost an insult, right? It was an afterthought.
Yeah.
I remember, this is more obscure, but Marc-Andre Bergeron couldn't fit on a team because he'd have 50 points a year, but oh, they were all power play points. And today, that guy would be uber valuable.
Yeah, 100%. And he'd be underpaid as well, and he'd be getting you 50 points. So it has. You know, everything has changed in a short amount of time, but the game is just continually growing. There's just so many more players that can play at such a high level, and the biggest thing about going to the NHL is the brain. It's the brain, how quick they can think, and there's just more guys today that can think at that high level than can't. So that's why you just see there's so much competition. So when you got to specialize, you really got to be really good at it now.
And then, you know, going back to that agitator side, and if you are a guy that's trying to agitate, you know, part of that is trying to get the best players on a different team off their games. And we see that with the star players all the time. Like last night, and we saw it in game one as well, between the Canucks and the Wild, players going after Pettersson, trying to get him off his game. He doesn't seem really fazed by that. Now he does fight back as well and play, you know, fairly hard for a guy of his caliber. But is it deflating or difficult when you are an agitator trying to get a guy off his game and he doesn't and still succeeds? Like, how do you deal with that if it doesn't work out?
Well, yeah, it's very deflating if you're agitating and then they go out and score or do something. That's the toughest time is to agitate or in those situations. And the best agitators don't give up when they're down. They're the guys that keep at it. I know Hartman actually took a pretty good one from Pettersson. So Pettersson's not scared to go back at these guys that are coming at him, which is, it's great to see. He tries to stick up for himself. You would like to see other guys hop in there for him a little more often, I think. But at the end of the day, as an agitator, you got to stick with it. You can't take your foot off the pedal, or they're just going to keep. If the other guy knows that he has you down, they'll step on you and keep you down, which is, it's not a great feeling.
You mentioned that maybe, you know, players should step up for Pettersson more. Is that something that other teams notice? Right, like, you know, you guys go after Pettersson. Pettersson stands up for himself. But if that response doesn't consistently happen, you notice it. Like, how does the opposition see that?
Yeah, they would see that for sure. They would see, you know, Hartman going after him and other guys. And if there's no one coming to his aid there, and in playoff hockey, they do let more slide. I don't think they don't protect the stars the way they should, especially in playoff hockey. And teams know that, you know, they're not stupid about that. So they're going to continually go after him. So, if you're the Vancouver Canucks, you are going to need guys to step in at points to calm it. Otherwise, the coaching staff and the management's going to have to talk to the reffing, and they're going to have to do their job to stop that extracurricular stuff with Pettersson. But he's going to need guys, because guys will see that he's taking it, and they're not going to stop until, like I said, either someone does or the refs do it.
Christopher Stieg, our guest, 11 years in the NHL and a Stanley Cup champion. He joins us here on Sportsnet 650. Do you have a story? Maybe it was against one of these Canuck teams, so maybe, you know, Canuck fans don't want to hear it. But that magical moment where you know you've broken through agitating another player, and you know that moment where you're like, yeah, like I got him. He's mine. Does one come to mind where you really had an effect?
Well, there's just so many. I wouldn't say like I would be like I got him, but the best moment I think for me as a player when I was going up against, it was kind of like my hero, is Jerome Iginla. We played Calgary in 2009 in the playoffs, and they had our line out against Iginla every single shift, and they're basically telling us not to wake up Iginla, you know, don't wake him up,
right?
And all that. And but the way our team was kind of built, we weren't built that way. We were all, it was like a collective thing, myself, Burrish, Eager, we all went at him physically, and you know, you would chirp and everything, and you didn't break the guy. There's no way you could break again. Like, he was such an incredible talent, and he got angry. But at, you know, when we beat him at the end of the day, and it was like, wow, we went at, you know, arguably one of the best players in the league, and we found a way to win. That was pretty satisfying.
That, man, you'd have to get over that in a hurry, right? Because like you said, I mean, that guy's such a legend. You probably attended games of him in the early days. And
yeah, he was a god in, you know, Southern Alberta.
Yeah.
He's huge there. And I remember, like, it was about 2004 during their cup run. I just turned 18, and I was at the bar with a Calgary puck on my head cheering for the Flames. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it was like... It was right after that, actually, I got drafted. But, I just remember being just the biggest Jerome fan and lining up my first ever game in the NHL. I played in Calgary, lined up against Jerome Iginla, and then you play against him a year later in the playoffs. Yeah, it was just such a crazy moment. And going at him, though, just seeing everything he's been through and going to war against him was pretty amazing.
Now, Chris, before we let you go as well, and, you know, since you have seen, you know, obviously the playoffs and have seen some of the Canucks against the Minnesota Wild, what's been your general takeaway from the disparity in some series and maybe on the Canucks series? Like, you know, how close do you think that is, and how do you think of them as a team in that series?
Well, I'm going to give you my first analysis of the Canucks Wild series, is they're the two worst-dressed teams in the entire league on the way to the game. They're both wearing free polos. I don't know what colors. The ones were blue. I could go on about that all day. But anyways, that series is very close. The Minnesota's a team that's going to hammer it down. They've always, I don't know what it is. They've had five or six different coaches since I kind of came in the league, but they always play the same way, that a little bit of a boring lull you to sleep type. And then you're playing against a team with high octane, young offensive superstars. You know that they're going to go at them. They're going to try to agitate them. That's where guys like Roussel and these guys are going to have to step up to the plate and help out and actually keep a lot of energy on the bench as well. But the league is so close, and I didn't expect this to be a cakewalk. I thought Vancouver would win, especially with their goaltending and Markstrom too. But it's going to be a tough series, and these role guys are going to have to play a huge part, especially keeping the bench up and keeping them energized.
Great stuff, Chris. I know the pandemic kind of threw everything into flux for everybody, but are we going to see on a broadcast somewhere soon, or what's the deal?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, I talked to Sportsnet possibly about doing a little bit prior to the pandemic when I came back, and been doing a little bit of spots here and there with Sirius and TSN. So just kind of freelancing, and whoever wants to talk to me, I'm open to talk to you. It's been fun talking hockey and watching it again. I'm sure at some point in the future, if someone wants me on, I would love to go on and talk hockey.
Cool, man. Well, you're welcome with us anytime. Good chatting.
For sure. Good talking to you again, Andrew.
Yeah, you bet. See you later, Chris.
See you guys.
Chris Versteeg is a longtime NHLer. Was a thorn, man, a thorn in everybody's side. I mean, he was more than just an agitator. I know he gets thrown into that conversation with the Bolins and the Burrishes and all those guys that it wasn't just the Canucks. I mean, half the league probably calls the Hawks their rivals in those days, right? Because they won, they won three Stanley Cups. But it's guys. The important thing is the Keiths and the Taves and the Kane, right? The important thing always is going to be the Pettersons and the Hughes and the Bessers and the Millers. We know that. But guys like that, guys like the Versteegs and the Bufflins and the Lads and they take a good team and make them great, or a great team and make them great for, you know, X amount of years.
Oh, I mean, you need to have that overall depth, and that's why, you know, it keeps always coming back to, no matter how good you've become as a team, you still have to keep finding players in the draft. You still have to find players in later rounds. Like, the Blackhawks are built on guys they found outside the first round. Like, as much as we talk about the high-end picks, they also missed on a bunch of guys. Cam Barker, for instance.
Sure.
You know, Jack Skilly, for instance. Even Slater Cuckoo was a top 10. Yeah.
They caught a break with Letty because they got him from Minnesota. Minnesota gave up on him.
Well, exactly, right? And, you know, they got Bufflin late. They picked up guys as UFAs. They got Patrick Sharp in a nothing trade.
Yeah.
Right? So, I mean,
For former Red Deer Rebel Matt Ellison.
Right, right. Yeah. That's like one of the most lopsided trades ever. So, it's, you start looking at how they built their team. That's how you become a three-time Stanley Cup champion.
05-06. God, that's a long time ago. I covered Chris Versteeg's final year in junior. Got to know him when he was playing for the Red Deer Rebels. And also on that team, the leading scorer was a 16-year-old Brandon Sutter.
Brandon Sutter. That's, you know, it's you and your Alberta roots.
Oh, yeah. And I'm looking at that roster.
Oh, Jordan Henry. That's what, okay, so that's the Jordan Henry connection. I got it.
Right. Yes. Yes. Jordan Henry, a buddy of mine who just, you want to see now you're not going to know who this is because he didn't play in the NHL. He was a late cut 1 year for the Calgary Flames, but also on that team was a defenseman, 19 years old at the time, by the name of Jordan Henry. And he just announced this week, and you might've seen me tweet about it, he announced his retirement from hockey at the age of 34. Now, he never made the NHL, but you talk about one of those guys that played everywhere for so many years. You want to check out Jordan Henry, not Hendry, because he was a guy that did play in the NHL for a while, but Jordan Henry, one of the all-time great hockey DB pages. Like, you basically need, like, you need to go to, like, page 2 of Google to see it. It's so long. We're talking almost, you know, 15, 20 years with probably 15, 20 teams. It is in every league around the world, one of those crazy pages.
Yeah, it's unreal. And I mean, dude, he lived his dream, right? And he wanted to just play hockey professionally. He did it until his mid-30s. And now he can, you know, go and live life in his prime still, right? Like, it's still, you know, as much as we sit here and obsess about the NHL, because that's what we do, we talk about the top league and the top team here in the Canucks. Doing what he did is an incredible journey. Like, being that type of hockey player that can live that type of life is really cool. We fixate on the NHL, but there are different ways to live that dream.
So really quickly, because I never get to talk about the 05-06 Red Deer Rebels with Brandon Sutter and Christopher Stieg, I'm going to give as many shout-outs as I can, including some local ties. Surrey's own Kenny Petko was on that team. I want to say, was there a... Oh, yes. Also, shout-out to Maple Ridge's Luke Betts, who was on that team. I don't know if those guys are listening or not. And also, the goalie on that team was James Reimer, who... Man, what a flex from Carolina yesterday. Peter Mrazek is unbelievable in this series for Carolina, and they're up 2-0 on the Rangers, and what do they do? They're like, yeah, we're just going to play Rhymes to give him some work in this playoff game. And then he was unbelievable with that flurry of saves, and the Hurricanes sweep the Rangers. Are the Hurricanes, we got to go to break. We'll talk about this after the break, but the Hurricanes, are they a legit Stanley Cup contender? I don't want to overreact to a play-in series, but man, do they look good. Andrew Walker, Satyar Shah, back with so much more, including your text, 650-650, on your home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. There it is. There it is. Back on the show, Andrew Walker, Satyar Shah. We got to mix that one in to our Canucks postgame shows, which I don't want to get ahead of it, Sat. We're only after game two, but they're becoming legendary. The all-night postgame shows. We haven't stayed up all night yet, but I think it's coming. I don't think Sat is there.
I can literally see Sat has muted his mic, but I can't fix it. Sat, unmute your mic, coward.
Ah, there we go. Now I'm trying to talk, and I can't.
Thought you were, man, I got ghosted enough. I don't need it on this show.
And I was like playing along with you, like the music's not kicking in. I'm like talking to myself, thinking I'm making great radio.
We need to come in. We got to tell Cam Bear, our executive producer of the Canucks broadcast. Maybe not tomorrow because it's an early start, so we'll be going all afternoon. But yeah. Game four on Friday, we very well might go all night long if the Canucks win the series.
That was why the Commodores ended. They wanted to do all afternoon long. And Lionel was like, I think it's all night long is better.
Have you seen that? Have you seen that? That new, not a couple years old, but the Beatles movie and the guy remembers all the Beatles
yesterday?
Songs and yesterday. Yeah. It's actually a really good movie. And then he's like writing quote unquote Hey Jude, and Ed Sheeran's like, man, you should call it Hey Dude. Much better. Yeah. Andrew Walker, Satyar Shah, Vic Nizar with us as well. We got a lot to get to here in the 6 o'clock hour, including. All right, so let's start. Actually, you know what? I want to start with the back check heard around the world
last night. Here it is.
The back check heard around the world. Jake Virtanen, while on the second unit power play, I believe, there was a turnover, and it looked like Minnesota might get a breakaway, and Jake raced back to make a very solid defensive play against the Minnesota Wild, negating a chance on goal. Easily his most impressive minute in the or moment in the 8 minutes in which he played last night, getting back in the lineup.
True.
It's good. All right, here's where I come, Sat. It was good. It was positive. He was part of a 17-man unit or 18-man unit that you know beat the Minnesota Wild last night. Everyone pulling in the same direction. All hands on deck. It's great. But like, yes, I would hope so. Like we're very quick to applaud Jake, and that's good. It was a good play. But like, imagine if he didn't back check. Like, that's it. He is supposed to do that, all right? Like that's part of the deal by being a millionaire hockey player and getting back in the lineup, is that you do race after the guy to try to stop him. The other option would be not to do that, and he did it. So it was good, and it was effing right. Like, it was a great, it was a very pump up moment, but like let's keep things in perspective here. People are like, he's never coming out of the lineup. It's like, okay, like easy. Like, let's.
No, I thought it was funny. I thought it was a moment you can have fun with. Like, my joke was he made Travis Green's heart flutter. Because, we always talk about Jake doing the things he needs to do defensively, not making mistakes, not costing the team defensively. and he back checks and he makes the play. Here's the thing on the play, right? I think it's a good play, and I think he deserves to get credit for it. Of course he should. Yes, he's supposed to back check. But also, breaking up a play without taking a penalty like that is also a good thing, right? Like,
no, it was a good thing.
I agree. I don't say you're saying this, but I'm saying generally speaking, like, it's not like one of those moments where it's like, why are people even giving him credit? It's like, well, no, he took away a breakaway without taking a penalty. Like, that's a good thing. Like, he did a really good thing during the game. It doesn't mean that he figured out, you know, how to make fire. You know, it's not like he figured that out. Like,
I have made fire. Look at me. I have made fire. Yes. And okay, full disclosure, and I'm not a Jake hater by any means. I think he's all right. I think that he's a guy that if they moved off of, I don't think he's ever coming back to haunt the Canucks a la Cam Neely. It's fine. If anything, he's more like a Jared McCann, who is okay. Right, but you know, it's not like oh, we rue the day we traded Jared McCann.
Some do.
Right, but we shouldn't. I mean, yes, it was the Gabranson deal which makes it worse. But
we got Pearson. It's like, yeah, Pearson, right? Sure. Plus a second.
But the sure,
always plus a second. That's the thing that pisses people off. It's the other pick.
Okay, so even a bad example. But yes, if Brandon Sutter, who I stand for, if Brandon Sutter made that play last night, I'm coming in finger guns, right? I'm like, hey, boys, how about that back check? So
yeah,
I get it, but then there'd be a segment of people being like, oh, why? Of course he has to back check because he can't score, like, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yes, it was a positive thing. And you know what? That play alone, and the injuries are going to factor in, that play alone and the win, which is the most important thing, might solidify Jake's bottom six role for game three, for sure. But a back check does not a superstar make. All right, that's just what I want to say.
No, I get it. But hey, like, honestly, it was a nice moment. Why even bother dissecting it too much? It was a nice moment. People get hyped
because it's
during
being dissected.
It goes back to the emotions of a playoff game, right? Like, you know, if you're being reasonable about it, you realize it's really not going to put him over the top for the rest of the playoffs or the rest of his career. But in the moment, people get hyped and they will aggrandize things a lot.
Well,
I know Bick and Justin both have thoughts, and you guys were getting into it on Central.
Well, we made it 49 minutes without bringing it up, and I kept looking over the clock, and I was like, hey, man, like, I'm actually proud of us that we're not going to mention it. Not that it didn't need mentioning. It's just, like, there was a lot of other things that happened in that game.
It's
and today... And today, we made it 2 hours, 10 minutes. I was like, you know what? We're not going to talk about it. I'm pretty proud of us that it was a footnote in that game. That's all it was. It was a footnote.
So,
and the point I was just making earlier, it's like, for all the people that believe in his top six potential of Jake Virtanen, you're allowed to believe that. But then why are you setting the bar so low for him on a back check when he's the last man back? Like, he's not going to just stand there. He said, you think I should do this or should I go change? Of course he's going to go back.
What are you
talking about?
Do you think he saw, like, the because you know how they have the fan videos in the big screen? You think he saw, like, a slow clap up there and he was like, I'm going to do it. I'm going to catch it. I'm going to catch this guy.
By golly, this time I'm
going to
do the
right thing. See, well, and because I saw a poll, and listen, we're our own worst enemy. I saw a poll, I believe it was our radio station that put out the poll today. What was the best moment of game two? And is it like Pettersson?
Oh, no.
And is it like Besser scoring and Miller snipe or Vertanen's back check? It's like, no.
Not the same category.
I can't remember.
No.
It might have just been one of the million fan podcasts to you. I don't know.
To me, the impressive part of that play wasn't that he had an epiphany that he had to back check. Like, Tim Hunter used the S word a couple of times already today, so I can't do it right now.
No S, Sherlock. We're over our quota.
But it's the fact that, you know, he got there and he broke up the play without taking a penalty. And that, to me, you know, without allowing an actual chance on a breakaway, that's a good thing. So to me, that was the key of that play. And, you know, whatever, give it credit. But let's not act like this is a big storyline that has to be talked about for however long we're talking about it.
I'm going to our Twitter account today. We've had some great stuff today. Yannick Anthon talked about the drop pass from last night. My email that I sent out. But yes, we did put out that poll question earlier today.
I might be mistaken. Where do you weigh in, Justin?
Well, I don't even think it was the most impressive back check in the game. Pedersen also had him way beat in period one. But the number one thing for me was,
Are we ranking back checks now?
he got.
I did earlier today. I did put out that like the distracted boyfriend meme.
Yes, right.
He got lucky in that Eriksson Ek deked directly into his skates as well, which helps.
Yeah,
but...
well, because Eriksson Ek knew he was going to be caught. Like he was fading, and Jake had a full head of steam, and yeah.
But I saw a lot of people using this as an opportunity to like dunk that. Oh, you don't think Jake can play defense? There's a huge difference between back checking one time and playing proper in zone defense.
Right, but also
when the location is obvious, it's not like you have to like discern between two guys. Yeah. Like, well, which one's going to the net and who's the high slot guy? It's the lone guy carrying the puck. That's all it was.
Now, we are the worst. We have spent
not anti-narrative.
No, I get it, but we have just spent the most analysis we have on a single play all game on this thing.
Yeah,
and because it was overpraised. We're trying to normalize it. But that's all we're doing.
But
here.
That's what you get with Jake, and it's like he does anything, and it becomes a thing, and that, you know, even callers in the post game, they're like, ah, Miller and Pedersen, and boy, Markstrom was great, and Jake back checking, like people reference it. But I do. Okay, so
sure,
are you ready for?
He got speed. He went in. He made a good play.
Yeah.
Like it's good.
And he's
move on.
And he's yes. And he's supposed to do that. But this is the. You talked about the bar being a little low. Are you ready for another awful obscure movie analogy?
Yes.
Because I got I got one here. It reminds me of the Oscar. Well, it wasn't a Oscar winner, but it was an Oscar nominated film called Little Big League. In the mid to late 90s, and it was about a young man whose grandfather dies and bequeaths to him the franchise of the Minnesota Twins. Actually, I think we have a clip from it.
Jenny, Billy, if you're watching this tape, I guess I'm dead.
Oh, no.
I'm sorry. Billy, you're my best friend in the world, and I want you to have my very favorite thing, the Minnesota Twins.
Man, when my grandpa died, all I got was a sweater.
So, yeah, so that's basically the plot line of it. And Billy, young Billy, who is, you know, not happy with the direction of the team, instills himself as manager. Can you believe it?
Yeah.
So he is the man. He's managing the Minnesota Twins. Actually, not to be confused with the movie of the same year, with a very similar-looking kid. It might be the same actor who pitches for the Chicago Cubs. Totally different movies. Came out the same year. Anyway, so Billy manages the Twins, and his favorite player, much like the Christopher Stieg, Jerome McGinley story we just heard, his favorite player is a veteran infielder for the Twins, veteran first baseman. And he sucks, man. He's washed. This guy's washed. And the team wants to cut him, but Billy keeps believing in this guy because he has this childlike, like, fan, you know, he wants the guy to succeed. And it's, you know, the guy comes in, pinch hit, and, you know, Billy's excited, the manager, and he's excited for this guy because he wants him to get going. He wants him to, you know, save his job kind of thing. And he hits a grounder that goes between second and first for a single. And Billy's super excited, and he's like, there we go, that's going to get this thing going. There we go, base hit. And his bench coach looks at him, he's like, Billy, if you're getting this excited over a seeing eye base hit, does that not tell you that maybe something's wrong? And then the next day he cuts him, and it's a big scene. And that's what my thing was. Like, we are so excited about a Jake Virtanen back check. Is that not a little bit problematic in the big picture?
It is, but like I said, it is heightened by the playoff moment. But the best part of that scene is when he's trying to, when he goes up to cut the dude, and he's like, I have all your cards. Like, I'm your biggest fan, but I got to cut you. And he's like, I don't give a crap of my cards.
He's like, I got to feed my family. It's like, haven't you played 20 years in the bigs?
Yeah. I know. No, I care about my car. I need to feed my family. Like, what have you been doing for 20 years?
Have you wasted all of your money? Yes. But again, like most things in life and most things about the Vancouver Canucks, they can be analogized with a reference from Little Big League.
It's true. It's the, you know what it is? It's always the extreme reaction and this belief in certain players. There is still a belief that Jay can be more than he is, and a lot more than he is by a lot. And as long as that belief exists, you are going to hear things like that. You know, like,
and I agree, but can we wait till it's like six games in a row and not one back check?
Yeah, or he scores or something.
It wasn't just the fans either, though. Like, Chris Cuthbert was salivating over every little thing that Jake did in this game, even when he hadn't done anything yet.
Yeah.
But hey, guys,
we will not stand for Chris Cuthbert slander on our.
No. Here's the thing. You guys talk about it's an entertainment industry as well. It's a business too, and you got to sell the storylines. Jake's a big storyline. People are interested in Jake Virtanen. Every time you talk about it, people react. People have interest in it. So it's an interesting topic that will get used. So let's not act like there's no value in talking about Jake Virtanen. He is always a topic that people will react to.
He is to,
he
will
is get
to
talked
us,
about a lot. So let's he, be fair yeah. about that as well.
He is to us what Tim Tebow was to ESPN. Let's be honest.
There you go. I mean, you can make that example if you want. But regardless, it is a topic that people – like. Let's not act about, like it's a surprise that people talk about Jake Virtanen, right? Like, is anybody surprised? Like, are you gobsmacked that this happened yesterday?
Honestly, a little bit. I wouldn't have been surprised if he scored a goal, even if it was just a lucky rebound goal or something. Everyone would just be like, "Flex time, Jake!" But like, he played 8 minutes and he backchecked. So I am a little surprised that people were that wound up about Jake. Like, he played 8 minutes.
Yeah. No, I know.
I am a little surprised.
Fine. But I do think that this reaction is almost like that you guys are having that's this strong to this is kind of similar to the overreaction going the other way. Like, there's a bit of a correction here.
Randeep, God bless his soul. Randeep compared
he was
it
joking.
To Randeep compared it to Pavel Bure's first game at GM Place.
But he was kidding.
I don't think he was.
He was. He said it afterwards. And somebody texted in to defend Jake 650-650. Man, you guys are being jackasses. Jake was easily our third best forward all game.
Come on! This is what I'm talking
about! We're not...
Third best forward?
He wasn't even as good as Louis Eriksson!
You're anti-narrative. Stop that. You're normalizing what happened.
You guys are so triggered.
Well, it's because third best forward. Like, wow. Brock played. JP Miller played.
Man, I'm all... I'm all... Man, I'm
break.
All... I'm all for the wild takes. I'm all for the wild takes. We had a call last night in the postgame show, and great listener, great caller. I Jordan from Victoria, is that his name? I can't remember. Johnny, maybe. And he was flexing because he's like, Travis Green finally woke up, and he gave the fans what we wanted, and the fans were right. And I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. I'm like, you, as a fan, this fan base, you finally got what you wanted. Adam got it scratched and Louis Eriksson playing 20 minutes. No, 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 no. I'm not buying that for a second. I'm not buying that for a second. Like, so again, these takes have to be rooted. Like, again, Jake, third best forward. They got to be rooted in a sense of reality. All right?
Sure. Like, but of all the things to try to, like, downplay in the game. Like, they won the hockey game, and you guys are getting super triggered about this. Like, seriously. Let's be honest about it.
Hey, no, look. I'm not getting triggered by the play. I'm getting triggered by the conversation about the play. No.
I love it.
Credit. Like, well done, yes. But can we wait for the celebration to, like, six games in a row? That's all I'm suggesting. Right? Like, do not, like, set the bar higher, and then maybe he will fulfill the potential that you see in him. If you set the bar low and he clears it and it's like, wow, I got praised for it, I don't need to try any harder. Right? That's all I'm saying.
I think we should make a pump-up back check song. Like a parody song.
The pump up. What is it? Is it for Jake? Or just like for us?
No, for us celebrating the back check. That's how good it was.
The back check. That's how
I think it deserves its own song.
People
baby
are
got,
up in the
baby got,
box,
how about Baby Got Back Check?
Well, what's the phrase? Forecheck, backcheck, paycheck, right? Yeah. Can we just be like FBP or something like that?
How about
Hey,
Drake, back to back check. Baby,
you down with FBP? Yeah, you know me.
Baby, come back check. I don't know. All right,
I want my baby back. Baby back check.
My neck, my back check.
No, don't.
Oh, terrible, terrible.
Can we? All right.
Awful.
Send us your puns with.
No, God, no. Why? Why? What is this?
It's the conversation that never ends.
I'm petty. I won't back check now.
Before we go, here's a question. Nobody beats the brick. No, nobody has looked better than, I don't know. Shout out to Mike Comrie. Nobody has looked better in the qualifying round than the Carolina Hurricanes. Are we in agreeance?
Yes.
Are the Carolina Hurricanes, who did go pretty deep, second round or conference finals last year?
Conference final.
Jeez, yeah. So, okay. So you throw those two together. Are the Carolina Hurricanes guys a legit Stanley Cup contender right now?
Yes. Yes.
I think so, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're missing their best defender, too.
Yeah.
Their best offensive defender. Well, anyway.
Yeah.
Slavin's their best defender.
Slavin's their best player.
Yeah, but Dougie Hamilton, like, they're just going to add him at some point.
Oh,
like,
I know.
Oh,
exactly.
Wow.
Oh,
that's
pretty
insane.
And I say Slavin's their best player, best defenseman, because I don't know about this, what's his name? Ahu kid? He's really good as well.
Sebastian hears Ahu?
Quite good. Yeah. Yeah. And meanwhile, Svechnikov,
him too. Yeah.
Well, we talk about how, like, Quinn Hughes took, you know, like, the 4 months off. It's like, he's young. He even got better. It's like, yep. Svechnikov took a step in the pandemic. Yeah.
Well, people are like, yeah, he's actually way older than his actual draft. And I heard some of those things, too, in his draft year. And I didn't want to talk about it then because I felt it was unfair, you know, in his draft year to talk to the media about it. There were rumors about it. But I'm like, even if he was, it's not stopping him from improving.
Yeah. And unless he's
35.
Yeah. Who's the kid that dominated the Little League World Series because he was, like, 16?
Oh, what's his name? Man, I know the kid. What is his name?
I can't recall either. I always had daydreams too. It's just like when I was like 14.
Danny Almonte?
Almonte, that's it. When I was like 14, I'm like, I wonder if I could, you know, hit 300 at the Little League World Series because they're all children. Probably not. The answer's probably no.
Hi, I'm Richard Gilboy. Back home, they call me Ricardo, and I take Big Daddy hacks.
Yeah, love Williamsport. Danny Almonte drove his own car to the game, basically. When we come back, we'll kick around some stuff. Probably hear from Patrick Johnson, I'm assuming, and the daily isolation mailbag. It is on the way, Sportsnet 650.
Hi, my name's Alfred D'Elia. At home, they call me Big Al, and I hit dingers.
Andrew Walker, Satyar Shah, it is the program. One final segment to go. And believe it or not, we are only 15 hours away from the pregame show, Sat. So have a little dinner, get a good sleep, wake up, have a coffee, and away we go. I'm excited.
Yeah, man, I am jacked up for it as well. I'm actually gonna have to wake up a bit earlier than I normally do. Nowadays, I'm up between like 8:30 a.m. or so. So tomorrow, I'm gonna set an alarm for 7 a.m.
because you need to do your fitness is life routine. Kind of thing?
No, it's not about that at all. I mean, I'm probably not even going to exercise tomorrow because by the time I'm done, I'm definitely not exercising. I know what I'm doing the first thing I'm off after tomorrow's post-game show.
Win or lose, booze?
100%. Yeah. Especially after a nice summer day. We're not going to be working until 7 p.m. the way the schedule is going to work out. So it's like I'm definitely going to be having a couple of brews. The question will be, you know, will it be in celebration of a Canucks victory?
Right. Will it be happy brews or sad brews? They both taste great, to be honest. But 100%. Yeah, so we'll be doing the pregame at 9:30 tomorrow morning. Puck drop at 11:30 for game 3, pivotal game in this series, and that means Friday night Canucks will need to win to stay alive, or a win puts them into the no questions asked playoffs. We're not going to be debating if it's playoffs or not if they win a couple of games here. And then after the game, of course, Yannick Hansen, Ed Jovanovski going to join us on the post-game show. They'll be with us during the game, too. And we'll take you, I mean, who knows, until 5, 6, 7 p.m. And we'll keep it going, because no matter what happens, we know you're going to want to weigh in out there. So Dan Riccio, Randeep Janda are going to come in as well. So we'll do an extended post-game show, hours and hours, until you tell us to stop, basically.
Yeah, and we wouldn't want to have it any other way anyways. We've been jacked up about the playoffs. We've been talking about this, right? Like, meaningful games, when we get there, it's going to be fun. We're going to be there for the entire journey for you. We're going to give you the best coverage possible. And we're here, and we want to live up to that standard and expectation we're trying to set out. So I'm super excited about it. Honestly, we can't do enough. And I know when the team wins, there is a desire for that content. We'll be here to provide it for you.
Before we get to anything else, let's get you a little update from the out-of-town scoreboard right now, the Sportsnet 650 goal horn. Is brought to you, as always, as it is for the duration of the playoffs, by BC Diesel, home of the $99 maintenance special. We've been having fun. We've been talking. We haven't really even been paying attention to the out-of-town scoreboard. And the Penguins and the Habs are locked up in a great game right now. Shea Weber opened the scoring for the Habs 5 minutes in. Hornquist tied it. Zucker, what an addition he's going to be. Zucker put the Penguins ahead. Teddy Bluger made it 3-1. And then Jonathan Drouin has just scored, so it's 3-2 now for the Pittsburgh Penguins, but midway through the second period. So a lot of hockey to be played. That series sat as tied at 1.
Yeah, man. And, you know, the incredible thing is, despite the Habs being so far out and there's being such a big disparity between the two teams as far as overall, you know, season and teams go, even though Pittsburgh is probably going to win this series, man, the Habs are taking a bite out of the Pens.
Yes.
Like, and it's like right now, Hornquist is double. Like, this is not an easy series, man. Like, I could understand why the Pens were pissed that they got the Habs. And I know they're going to beat them. I'm not worried about them losing the series. But you just watching these games, you see why the Pens didn't want anything to do with the Habs.
Yeah, Montreal came to play. Carey Price has been great. Montreal, even no matter what happens going forward, I do think they've been impressive. And then you look at, no slight against them. I think they're headed in a great direction, but then they lost their goaltender, et cetera. But like the New York Rangers barely put up a fight against Carolina. They rolled through them, right? So, Arizona, very impressive win, 4-1 over the Preds. So the Coyotes are a win away from knocking out Nashville. And the Panthers stay alive, 3-2 over the New York Islanders. So they're down 2-1 in that series as well. Yeah. Michael Ferland.
Hawks and Oilers tonight, too, by the way.
That's going to be good. Yeah, 7:30 tonight. We had former Hawk Chris Versteeg on the show. If you want to listen to that interview, go on the website, the podcast, sportsnet.ca/650. News of the day, and we'll hear from Patrick Johnson in a second on it, but a lot of injuries last night, right? So there's no Toffoli, there's no Gaudette. Ferland left after a couple of shifts, and Antoine Roussel took the puck to the ear. And we think he's going to be fine, but he didn't play the rest of the night, and Canucks ended up still winning. Elliot Friedman tweeting out today, Sat, that Michael Ferland is done. He has left the team. He's left the bubble. He's gone home to see doctors and recover. And sources are saying that it is, indeed, more of the same. More of the same issues, meaning concussions for Michael Ferland. We don't have, you know, absolute confirmation on that, but... Doesn't take 9 years of medical school to kind of put two and two together. It's not a great situation.
No, it's a tough situation for Michael Ferland, and you just have to kind of, number one, there is a difference, and I think this is an important thing. Regardless, it's bad news for him as a hockey player and the team, and I know that's what most fans are fixated on usually, although a lot of fans do care about his personal health. But from a personal health standpoint, there's a difference between having symptoms that are still recurring from previous concussions when he goes out and plays and competes to having suffered another concussion. So from that standpoint, I just hope he's, man, it sucks. I'm just hoping it's not the worst case. You know what I mean? Like, I'm hoping he didn't like suffer another concussion to make things even worse. So I'm hoping it's the best case out of a bad situation for him based on the stuff that's out there. We know the contract situation, and you're going to hear us talk to Patrick Johnson about it, about how that might affect the team and bigger pictures too. And as far as him playing again, I mean, there's been, you know, I'm of the belief that he may have gone into this walks with the understanding that it's his last try to make this happen. That, hey, you know, like, I've gone through this before. I have a young family. I'm trying to make this happen. But if I can't come back this time, maybe I have to listen. And if it doesn't work out this time, he said he wants to listen to, you know, the advice of medical experts as well. It's getting to the point where the advice is going to be pretty obvious. So, you know, again, not to get ahead of things with Michael Ferland, but, you know, it's a really tough situation on a number of different fronts. And I know he's probably grappling with a big, big decision right now.
We did hear from Patrick Johnson. Let's get into that conversation right now because there is different elements to this. And, you know, I know that you're not a monster if you instantly think, well, what about the cap? Yeah, there's the cap situation, but there's also, you know, the owner having to pay real dollars out of his pocket to a player that might not play for him anymore. Is that contract insured because of the injury? We got into all that with Patrick Johnson of the Vancouver Province. Take a listen.
Yeah, it sure sounds like it. Hard to imagine what else it is. I mean, I think as a few other people have sort of said, well, there was chatter on the broadcast about maybe there being a block shot. But when I went back and looked at the four shifts he played, I never saw anything that looked like him blocking a shot. You know, I think in the end, we have to go with the last information we knew with him, which was that, you know, he struggles with a lot of movement in front of him. That was what was causing him issues during the regular season. And that, you know, as he called it, it's your vestibular system. It has to do with essentially your ability of your eyes to track multiple objects at once. You get dizzy. You almost feel drunk was how he put it. So it's terrible to hear. You know, I mean, if there's a silver lining was that he didn't seem to be having these problems at home with his family. And, you know, that's what's most important right now is that he's able to be able with his family and live a full life. Even if they can't play hockey anymore, which, you know, you in the end hope is not the case, but it's hard to see given that this is now three attempts to play hockey since last December, and all three have ended in similar circumstances.
Well, it's just, you know, from a human element, it's just tough to see somebody go through this yet again. And I just hope from that side that he's going to be all right, but obviously it has an impact on the team, you know, long term or not. And, you know, they gave him a 4-year contract, and, you know, you can't predict how things are going to unfold, but he did have the conditions in the past. And, you know, I wonder as far as the contract goes and, you know, the level of insurance that's involved. Like, now that we're talking about a new world, PJ, where revenue streams are different, and you can put him on LTIR, that's fine, but if you can't get out from some of that money, like, these things become bigger issues today than they may have been a couple of years ago, potentially.
Absolutely. You know, I mean, I think when you signed this contract, it was a bit of a roll of the dice. I think we all knew that. You know, a player who did have some worries about concussion history, and I think was dealing with a few other issues coming from Carolina, is my understanding. You know, and so at the end of the day, you know, you're going, okay, well, hopefully this player can meet the term of the contract. But yeah, if I think it's both you and I have been hearing that there may not be a full load of insurance on this deal. You know, that's going to be tough, especially now with no fans in the building, no real revenues other than what you're getting out of perhaps, off TV and, you know, whatever other revenue streams you can get out there. It's going to be a pinch. I mean, it was no accident that last week they moved to start laying off people because they know what the sort of near future looks like. And, you know, there's the business case argument for it that, you know, that I guess you make sense. But at the same time, I think a lot of people swing on the other time, you know, other time, is this really a time to be thinking in pure business terms? Anyway, that's another story. But yeah, when it comes to that contract, you know, that's going to be $12 million still to be paid, or, you know, $12 million all told being paid out. And the guys played 16 games.
Patrick Johnson joins us here on the program. Andrew Walker, Satyar Shah. Game 3, Canucks and Wild, will be on the air tomorrow, 9:30 a.m. for the pregame show. Last night, we talked on the pregame show for a couple hours last night. We both expected the Canucks with a big bounce-back win, Patrick. That was kind of the theme around the NHL in these Game 2s, and we also kind of expected Pettersson to really step up and lead the way, and for once we were smart. It was that's exactly what happened. Pettersson was a beast last night. It was a coming out party of sorts.
100%. I mean, we saw a strong performance, I think, on Sunday. That was one of the things that kind of got lost. And, you know, we heard Travis Green talk about the idea of fine lines, which, you know, I think made some of us chuckle because it was a return to what Carl Robinson used to always talk about with the Whitecaps. But he's not wrong. You know, when you look at results and process, there's very few things that often distinguish a win from a loss. The Canucks didn't look good in game one. I don't think there's any doubt about that. They struggled to get to the slot. They struggled to generate quality opportunities. They didn't have any power plays. Last night, they had a ton of power plays. They had a ton of chances. You know, at 5-on-5, I think they still, in general, looked better. they certainly the energy felt better. You know, the numbers aren't all that different if you look at the two different games. But on Sunday, Elias Pettersson was a dominant player, even if he didn't score. Last night, everything clicked. And, you know, you think about the impact he made, you know, just rushing the net on JT Miller's goal. You know, the depth pass he made on the doorstep to help Brock Besser put the puck in the net. You know, there were other examples, you know, in terms of how he played. You know, just a player that I think we knew coming out of the summer break, if you will, the pause, you know, looked as strong as ever, perhaps better. A young player who understands very well the work required to take himself to that next level, that he has the skill set that will take him a long way. But to become great, you have to put in so much work and you have to be so focused and so dedicated on what you're doing in creating, you know, the player you want to be. And, you know, I think we're seeing the results of that. You know, and as we know, he's meshed so well with JT Miller all year. And Brock Besser being healthy, coming back, those two have had chemistry in the past. It was no surprise to me that that line really was firing all cylinders last night.
Well, and also, Brock Besser, the way he played, we've been talking about Besser since his rookie season, and he set the standards so high, the expectations so high with how well he played and how he scored. We haven't seen that shot in the first couple of games, you know, get wired past goalies the same way so far. But as far as his jump, his physicality, the way he has risen to the moment, the way how hard he's been playing, like we're starting to see again, like the best version of Brock Besser.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is a player that, you know, coming out of last summer, he told me very much about how important it was to him to get a real full start, that he'd had a, you know, an off season that he wanted to have. But then of course, dealing with his father, his contract situation, you know, it wasn't an easy start to the year. And yet, you know, he persevered, he showed lots of good stuff, but there were still moments, I think, where we all kind of said, it's not quite, you know, where you want to be. This is a guy that I think, you know, he doesn't sort of brag about the work he puts in. That's not his character. You know, he's much more happy to talk about hanging out with his friends and his teammates and that sort of thing. But he told us, you know, I think he wanted to make it clear how much work he put in this year. You know, he, despite the circumstances, the challenges that the lockdown that they were dealing with in Minnesota, like in so many places around North America, that put on him in terms of how he could maintain his fitness and get stronger. And he worked hard to do both those things. And a player like him, like Pettersson, the quicker you are, the more, you know, honed in your body is in physical terms, the more things you can do. And I think we've seen that through two games. There's a zip to his stride. You know, we certainly saw last night that old Besser shoot from anywhere mentality. I mean, let's be clear, he shoots from anywhere, but where he's shooting from is almost always a great position. You know, this isn't a guy that's firing pucks off the boards towards the net, hoping maybe they hit the goalie and bounce in. This was a guy that looked like he knew what he was doing and fully deserved that goal, I think, as I tweeted at the time.
He is noticeably quicker. And, yes. And honestly, the last couple of years, it's been a bit of an argument because I understand that, you know, fans want to support their guy. And kind of the thing has been, you know, Brock doesn't look like he's moving the same as his rookie season. And people say, no, it's just not his game. And he's more smart than that. But no, it is different. He is noticeably quicker right now than he has been for probably 2 years.
Yeah, I think that's totally right. I mean, you go back with the struggles he had even from his first year, dealing with little injuries that set back his off-season training. And, you know, for him to have a full, in many ways, a full summer to prepare for this return, you know, and the way he clearly took advantage of it as he was trying to last year, you know, I think to me tells us everything. That this is a player that really does believe it. I think the chatter that may have popped up there about, you know, perhaps the team has been thinking about moving on from him, whether that was in the past or more recently, that it had happened at all. You know, I think that really spoke to him, that this is something he wanted to prove. He says, this is the team that drafted him. He wants to be here. And he wanted to show, you know, that the team was right to sign him to that contract last year, that he's a guy that wants to be, you know, one of the best players on this team. And, yeah, we're seeing that so far.
So the Minnesota Wild are they're more than a speed bump, you know, and they took game one from the Canucks, but I think we saw best case scenario for the Canucks last night. Like they are clearly a better team, especially in the goaltending department and with the amount of dangerous forwards they have. Kevin Fiala is great, but the Canucks have many more guys that can hurt you. Would you be surprised at this point if the Canucks didn't not ride off into the sunset, but was that the turning point last night in that series?
I mean, it's so funny to think about turning points given, you know, we're two games in. I think, right. I think of both games, like I said, both games are such narrow, such sort of narrow margins really that, you know, who knows what's going to happen next, but in the end, the Canucks did do more to get to the middle of the ice. Kevin Fiala found some goals late in the game. You know, the Canucks probably sat back more than they should, but that's been how they do things. I think at the end of the day, it really is about what you do with the chances you get. And if you don't make many chances, you're not going to score. Kevin Fiala is a fantastic player. You know, a great physical player. And he talked a little bit about it on the media call this morning, you know, just about the reality of you know, having to make things happen. He thought the Canucks checked him, you know, checked them overall much tighter than they did the game before, which, you know, is a compliment to the Canucks. So that has been a critique of how they play. So, you know, Fiala forever is going to be, you know, a bit of an X factor. But, you know, if you're going to have, you know, if you're going to win this series, you've got to, in the end, you've got to get good goaltending. You got to get great goaltending, because we know that with Jacob Markstrom has been the key to successful here. You know, your power play has to chip in, and you know, you have to at least, you know, hold serve at 5-on-5.
And, you know, on 5-on-5, they've done a decent job overall as a team. And, you know, a guy that actually helps their 5-on-5 play is Louis Erickson. And, you know, it's so funny, right, PJ, because we look at Louis and we all know the conversation is the same one. The contract, terrible. And yes, it's going to be a big issue for you. But the fact that he can step in and play as well as he has defensively in a game without having played 5 months, like, there is a floor that Louis Erickson brings. And in this moment right now in this playoff with these guys being injured, especially Toffoli being out, again, this is not about the contract, but in this moment right now, believe it or not, Erickson has brought utility, at least for one game.
Absolutely. You know, I think, you know, it was funny. It was, again, that was another topic. You know, Horvat was asked, what is it about Louis that you know, makes your game steadier? And you can't quite put your finger. Louis's been around. You know, Louis still has all the talent, you know, of a guy that was a great player in this league. You know, his hands may not quite be there. His wheels may not quite be there. But he's got all the kind of brain power. You know, in soccer, they always talk about how, you know, the veteran, best, smartest players always end up sort of they move further back on the field and towards the middle because, you know, they can't deal with the speed on the outside anymore. Well, you know, I'm not exactly arguing that Louis Erickson should become a defenseman or perhaps become a center, but he is a player that, you know, has to adapt his game from what he once was. And, you know, for whatever reason, does seem at times to be a case of the you know, the sum of the parts being greater than the parts themselves, right? I mean,
That is Patrick Johnson, our Canucks insider from the Vancouver province. We got to run. Listen to the rest of that interview if you want to get prepped and get psyched for Game 3 tomorrow. It is on the website, sportsn.ca/650. So this is what's going on. Justin Morissette coming up has a best of playoff hockey leading into the Blackhawks and the Oilers game number 3. You can catch live NHL action right here this evening on Sportsnet 650. Starting lineup gets going tomorrow bright and early on Sportsnet 650 leading into Sat and myself, Andrew Walker. We're right back on the air. Early start for playoff game day, game number 3. Pre-game with Yannick Hansen and Ed Jovanovski and us at 9:30 with an 11:30 puck drop. Going to be a big day. Have a great evening. Get your rest. You're going to need it for tomorrow. Sportsnet 650.